And the first item that we'd like to talk about tonight is going to be concerning the railroad depot, or depot, depending which way you want to pronounce it. As council realizes, they have made a commitment of $50,000 per year from our accommodation tax dollars to support the initiation and funding of this. They're ready to move forward with their fundraiser, but before they move forward, they wanted to discuss two different items with the city. One was the closure of Union Street in the northbound direction. Now, even though we say closure, we're talking about from Park Avenue to Cumberland, closing that so that landscaping and parking could be put into that area, and then the rest of the portion between Columbia, Cumberland and Richland Avenue, it would become two-way. That way, individuals going down Cumberland could still get to that location and vice versa. So they would like Union Street to become a city-maintained roadway. The other area was they wanted to talk about the make sure that City Council understood and was ready and willing to accept the railroad depot when the construction was completed. They have raised the funding, but they want the city to accept the responsibility. Tim Simmons is going to be the spokesman tonight for the group, and Tim, if you'd like to get up and tell us about what we have here. And every council member does have the package that you did send us.
Right, okay.
Good. Thank you, Raj. My name is Tim Simmons, and I live in Aiken. And it's been a few months since I've come before you to update you on the progress of the railroad depot. And as you remember, and as the brochures that were handed out to you show, we plan on having two dining cars surrounded by a deck, one caboose, baggage building with a catering kitchen and restrooms, depot building with open space on the ground store, historical display, ground floor, excuse me, historical displays on the mezzanine, and a cupola with observation deck, and of course, landscaping and parking. We have just completed our strategic plan and feasibility analysis concerning raising the funds to build this project. First Community Development Corporation conducted that program for us, and representatives from that organization are here this evening, Steve Durrow, Wayne Kaya, and Roger Donahue. McDonald Law is also here. He's the architect on the project and has been working with us concerning the design of this project. The feasibility analysis was very positive. It showed substantial support for the project. 92% of the almost 50 people, community leaders, corporate leaders, and elected officials rated the project beneficial, and 73% said that the plan for the project was excellent. The recommendation from First Community Development is that we start the fundraising campaign immediately. It will take about 8 months to complete. The first month, of course, will be getting organized, and then the actual solicitations will start after that. We will have, by necessity, we will have to start some phases of the project before the campaign is completed. The first part is the railroad cars. We've gotten an extremely good price on those, and we're required to go ahead and purchase those and get them moved down here in June. And the reason we have to get them to Aiken in June is because there are very few companies that restore old railroad cars, and we do have a company that has a window of opportunity to do it starting this summer, so we will probably start that. And this is how the railroad car will be restored. The dining car will be two of those that are restored for this condition. So we will have to start that before the campaign actually gets completed. In addition to that, the historical displays on the mezzanine, there are only a couple of companies that are able to do museum quality modeling and displays, and they have a window of opportunity starting in this fall, and so we will probably have to contract with them. In both railroad car renovation and museum modeling, because there are very few companies, they either have the time available or they're committed to another project, and you have to wait till they get through with that. So in order to get these companies tied in so they can begin this project in a timely manner. We will be moving forward with those prior to completion of the campaign. We've also completed the economic impact study of this project. USC Aikens, Department of Business Administration, helped us with that. And they calculated what the direct, indirect, and induced economic benefit of this project would be to the local community. The renovation itself should equate to a little over $6 million. The labor earnings for the project would be $2.8 million. On an annual basis, tourism should generate $1.5 million annually to the local economy, and tax receipts for the city should increase by $148,000 annually. So it should be a very economically beneficial project to the community. The cost to operate the structure, Glenn Parker and his staff did an analysis of this project to include janitorial, maintenance items, power, utilities, everything that could be involved in maintaining the facility for a year, and they came out to $26,000 annually. He also did a calculation on the potential revenue from the facility, and just for rentals for an event, if we rented it 50 times a year, that would generate the $26,000, so it should easily cover its cost of operation. Our request to you this evening is to, as you know from looking at the site plan, we need to block part of Union Street and to make the other two lanes of Union Street that aren't blocked two-way. And that would involve acquiring the street between Park Avenue and Richland Avenue from the South Carolina Department of Transportation. So we are requesting that City Council take the next steps necessary to achieve that. And also, that once this project is completed, it will be turned over to the city and operated by the city recreation department. The Friends of the Aiken Railroad Depot plans to stay in existence. They are now a committee of the Aiken Corporation, but once this project is completed, they plan to spin off, establish their own nonprofit status, and to continue to operate similar to what Friends of Rye Patch and Hopeland does. So there will be citizen support and oversight and advice and additional fundraising and effort ongoing to benefit the project and to work with the city in making sure this facility is operated properly. And feel like with the Aiken County Museum, the Thoroughbred Hall of Fame, the African American Cultural Center, the Aiken Fine Arts, the Performing Arts location, and this Aiken Railroad Depot, that will complete the history of Aiken and really create a tremendous attraction and add to the quality of life for Aiken. So that's where we stand so far, and I'd be happy to ask answer any questions that you may have.
Tim, thank you. Sorry I was late getting in. We're downstairs. Are there any questions of anyone? Any discussion of any kind? That sounds great to me. I tell you, y'all have done a wonderful job. And you completed all, I think you said you completed all your talking with folks around town, all your 50 or so, whatever. That's great. That's great.
I just have one question, Tim. You're planning to close the
northbound lane of
Union Street. Now, how does that impact me getting to church?
Okay, that's a good question. It'll only be closed between Park Avenue and Cumberland, and then from Cumberland to Richland Avenue will be two-way, so you will be able to come down. And
so I don't have to go around and come back up and then go in.
That's correct.
Correct.
I have some questions. What was the $6 million figure?
That figure was the total economic impact of the renovation.
What does that include?
That takes into account the money we spend on the renovation, and then that money filtering its way through the economy. So it's the final impact.
Well, I have to say, and I think you know what, how I feel about this. I think the world of you and the work you've done in this town. I think the world of Owen Sheets and also of Mac McLaren. But I haven't heard citizens clamoring for this the way you have. In fact, I've had two business owners telling me that they are already competing with subsidized space that the city provides in the municipal building, the Arts Center, Rye Patch, the Washington Center, Odell Weeks, Smith Hazel, and the new African American Cultural Center. And all of these are getting their operating funds from potential rentals for catering, it seems to me. And we're competing with private enterprise here, and it's not like we don't have some facilities to use already. And my understanding was that this was not going to include a dining facility. At least that was the last thing that we were told. Is the little train going to be there still or not?
No, that's not in this plan.
Good. Okay. I think that's a good idea, because I think operating that would be extremely expensive. So I have a big problem with funding the operation of this by providing subsidized space to cater dinners and parties and meetings, when we already do that. And these businessmen and women who spoke to me said, I'm already subsidizing this, and then I'm trying to run my own business. How many places are you going to provide? You know, and I couldn't answer that question. And when I read about the dining cars, I was really concerned. There are no exhibits, as I understand, so far for the building, correct?
There will be exhibits developed for the building.
And part of the budget is the purchase of those exhibits.
That's correct.
And the budget is about $3 million.
Right.
Which is more than 10 times what I was originally told it would be when this first came to us. And I'm not surprised it's $3 million. I mean, I didn't think the first estimates we got made any sense whatsoever, to be frank with you. What about this museum modeling company? What is that? Is that the exhibit part of it?
That's the exhibit, right. The Charleston-Hamburg Railroad line, which is the, you know all about that, that will be reproduced, and all of the towns along the way between Charleston and Hamburg will be represented in a diorama.
I'm not trying to burst any bubbles here, but I have talked to a lot of people in town, and I guess I didn't talk to the important people that volunteered to give money to this, but I haven't gotten a positive response about this at all, to be frank, from my constituency. $1.5 million annually is $125,000 a month from tourism?
Right. The tourism is about $800,000 a year, and then when you filter that on through the economy, that's where the $1.5 million dollar figure comes from.
And what does the $148,000 in taxes come from?
That should be increased in property taxes and sales tax.
The property tax, so we won't have any property tax on this if it's a public facility. Am I missing it?
No, it's the increase in property values that will be stimulated by
the
project being placed in.
Okay. I mean, I hope you understand some of my concerns, particularly when it comes to another dining facility.
Right.
How much money has been raised so far in the campaign?
We haven't really started the campaign yet.
Oh, I thought there had been several events. There have not?
Well, there have been some events that we've had over the years, and with dollars and in-kind campaigns, it's probably amounted to about $65,000,
$70,000. I just have to say that I'm a downtown person. I live downtown. I know the state of our sewers downtown, and we don't have the money to repair all of them. I know that we need to bury our electric cables, and we can't seem to afford to do that. I know that my friends on Lancaster Street can't even get their gutters fixed because it's not in the budget. And I really don't understand how we have the luxury of this project. I'll be frank. I don't.
Tim, this is actually not going to compete with a caterer, but it's just going to give them another place in which
exactly.
to cater those
exactly.
meetings. So it's wide open to caterers from that standpoint.
Right.
And then I personally think that, you know, for a long time I felt as though we've needed to do something down at that end of Park Avenue to stimulate businesses. You know, the footprint of downtown right now is very limited with the places in which people travel. And I think that will encourage private enterprise to move further down Park Avenue and widen the footprint of downtown Aiken. I think it's a great thing.
I guess I need to say that as I look around and call around and trying to find places to have small functions, my experience has been that if you don't call months and months and months ahead of time, that they are usually all booked up. And so I am somewhat concerned that we would be limiting someone's business by putting another facility there. But then at the same time, I feel that, I personally feel that there are times when I wish we had something else. That sometimes one place is too large or too small or booked, and that, you know, sometimes you've got to adjust your plans because of that. But I do think that this would open it up, since we're not going to have a restaurant, a permanent restaurant there, that it would be open to whoever a caterer is that wants to go in, and they'll have another venue for setting up another affair. I also want to say that I think that having this in this part of town does extend downtown tremendously. I think that part of town is in need of some rehabilitation, something to spur growth in that direction. I also am not understanding that we will be fully funding this. It's my understanding that you are going to raise the necessary funds for this, and that this would not be solely on the taxpayers' back. And so at some point, as you come to give us updates, if your fundraising is not as successful as you hope, I mean, are there plans for you to scale back what you plan to do, or how are we going to look at that? If it's like Jane says, that you just don't have that much support out there and you can't get as much as you feel you can get right now, what do we do then?
We have the flexibility to cut back on certain phases of the project. Also, we have some cushion in those dollar amounts that we can hopefully fall back on. I would say that based on First Community Development's experience in handling fundraising, the support for this project is as good on any project they have ever seen. And they would not even begin to do a project that they weren't pretty much convinced that it was going to be successful. So we feel real positive that that's not going to be a problem. It may take us longer to get it than we want, but I believe the support will be there. This is just too much of a good quality project for this community. I know you can talk about you need to spend money for other things too, but until you establish the economic base, that's really what allows you to do all those other things that are needed on an ongoing basis. And this is just another item that will help solidify the economic base for Aiken and make it that much more of a quality place to live and an interesting place to visit.
Well, I'm hopeful because I remember 2020 when it got started.
Right.
And I'm going to wish you well.
Let's clear up one thing on the funding. It's my understanding that the money that would come from the city would be through the accommodations tax, which goes for related tourism activities. No money's coming out of the general fund or the utility fund for sewers or whatever. And those things, Jane, we have schedules, as you well know. We have schedules for maintaining our sewers and doing those things on undergrounding. And so I don't see that there's a relationship, really. Maybe there is that I'm missing.
Well, it all comes from the same pockets. I mean,
no, I think accommodations tax, accommodations tax comes from visitors and folks staying in our hotels and motels.
And that's $50,000 for 3 years. That's $150,000.
$250,000.
Out of $3 million. And then we're going to have to operate it. Mm-hmm. And if it's rented 50 times a year, it's going to earn $26,000. It's going to cost $520 to rent. Mm-hmm. Now, Beverly, I don't know if people mm-hmm. are going to spend $520. I don't know. Maybe they will.
Well, maybe that number will have to come down to start with as well. But, you know, the other point is that I've had people, I've not had no one tell me they don't like the idea. I've talked to several. And on the contrary, I've had several tell me that we need some more restaurants downtown. We've lost, over the years, we've lost Mango's and 10 Downing. And we may have picked up one that I don't recall right now, but we need a diversity in types of restaurants and eating places. I can see I've eaten in places. Houston, when I lived there for a few years, had this similar thing, and this is a real event, especially for young people, for kids, eating in a railroad car, that kind of thing. So I see it as a real plus. And the biggest plus, I think, is restoring one of our more and most historic features of our town that has so much to do with the history of Aiken. Not restoring, but rebuilding. And that's the depot itself. So I think we get a lot of things out of this. It's going to be a win-win situation for Aiken. And also, we have to think about the future. We might look at it today and say, well, gee, we don't need another restaurant. But, hey, Aiken is growing at 2.5% a year. We can all see how it's growing. We've got another 20, 30,000 people outside the city limits that come in here to eat. So for all those reasons, I firmly and strongly support this project. I think it's a real win-win project.
But it's not going to have what we were talking about is subsidized catering venues. It's catering venues subsidized by the city. That's what we're not restaurants that exist for everybody to visit when they have to.
No, the dining cars will be for people to come in and sit and eat. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And who will be operating those?
Well, the recreation department will be operating them, but caterers will actually be
right.
There are many times I kind of had Beverly's experience where I've tried to get the meeting space downstairs, and it wasn't available anywhere close to the time frame I needed.
Right.
So I think events this will enable more events to happen over the same period of time, and should increase the amount of business for food service providers. So I think it's the city supplementing the private sector in providing an additional venue for those folks to be able to service the public. So I think it will actually stimulate the food service industry, not compete with it.
Just so I understand, and I believe I understand, and for council understand, there will not be a kitchen associated with this. There'd be the caterers have tables where they lay out their food. There might be a warming oven, a microwave, and that'll be it. So there will not be a commercial kitchen in this location whatsoever.
That's correct.
So the meals in the railroad cars will be all catered?
That's correct.
Okay. And there'll be a variety of meals. Menu
that'll be up to the railroad cars are not going to be the only time, at least at this point in time, from my understanding, is the dining cars would be something that a private party would rent for an event. Now, this is not, the intention is not at this point in time for any one restaurant or any one caterer to be running this on a regular basis to be serving meals out of it.
That's correct.
Pretty much like the conference center is. You rent the conference center, you hire your caterer, they come in, they bring the food, they use the kitchen to heat it up.
Or rye patch.
Or rye patch, yes.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay. Excuse me. Any other comments?
How many people would each rail car?
36.
So you're talking wouldn't be logical or not very logical to have people separated into two cars. I don't know. You'd have to get joint speakers, I suppose, to take care of it. I think a lot of people know I'm not very enthusiastic about this. If it is a city-operated facility, because that's where the budget questions really become realistic. Mr. Mayor, accommodations tax is figured on the amount of visitors that you can document came to your facility because, or came to Aiken because of that facility. What if we just don't get that big an interest in it and the accommodations tax doesn't pay the operating expenses? How do we take care of it then?
I personally think that we'll have the money. The money will be generated to take care of it.
So we're going to pin it on hopes.
One of the things.
We do a lot of things like that, I think, but we do it on our best judgment as well. And we hope for the best based on our best judgment.
One of the areas that we're looking at is to determine if this is the best location for the city to run their tourism out of. So we may even have a staff person there operating most of the time.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
This location is one of the downtown locations that we're looking at as a possible permanent spot for our tourism to be operating out of. We don't think it should be operated out of the Parks and Recreation or Virginia Acres, Odell Weeks. And so it's, again, where is the best place for the tourism position to be operating out of?
That's not going to be at the African American Cultural Center?
It was, no.
I heard that one time. I'm just telling you.
At one time, the chamber was talking about taking the tourism back, but now they said that that's not in their future at this point.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. We'll have on the agenda at the next meeting the closure of the road and the acceptance of the facility once it would be built as a resolution by council, as you were asked then.
That's a one-time thing, the acceptance of the facility, a one-hearing issue?
It's not an ordinance. It's not a law that we've been passing.
Acceptance of facility is a one a resolution matter, not an ordinance matter. Selling property is an ordinance matter.
Okay. Hey, thank all of y'all for what you've done, for your work, your efforts that you put into this. Thanks.
And that the 9th of April, I think it is.
The second item is the Thomasons, who own the Carriage House Inn, also own a dilapidated house behind their structure. They would like to have some assistance with the removal of this. I had mentioned to them that in the past we have assisted, but council said that before we do any more assistance in the downtown area, that we that they wanted to go ahead and hear about it. In the past, we have done some assistance at the old gas station that was at the corner of Hayden Park. We have done some assistance with the old theater. There's a ramp behind the buildings on Hayne Avenue that we helped with. There, next to the city billiards, there's an old storage structure that we removed. In all cases, we basically did some hauling. Although this is a residential home, and the Design Review Board has given the approval for its removal, it was a commercial property in its most recent use. Again, because it was a commercial property and not a residential, we didn't feel it fit into the 200 demolition program, which is still ongoing and still being used for residential structures throughout the city. So again tonight, they are looking for the city to possibly assist with the removal of this building. If the council wants that to give them the assistance, we ask that the owner would have all the asbestos removed before any work would be started by the city, and that we would be involved, if at all possible, just in the hauling of the material to the landfill.
Excuse me, Mr. LaDuke, I'm trying to get something signed here. Are there any comments? Right. Is anybody here representing the Thompsons? I guess not.
How much will it cost?
If they remove all the asbestos and all we have to do is haul off the material, we could probably do it in a day, no more than 2 days, and going back and forth to landfill with a couple of trucks. So if you're looking at our actual cost, which would just be the fuel going back and forth, we're talking a matter of a few hundreds of dollars. If we start adding in the labor, we're probably costing $1,000.
I thought we had decided not to do this anymore.
That's what I told him, that council said that they really weren't in favor of doing this anymore, but he asked that we take it to council anyways, because we have done in the past. He gave some economic reason. I'm not too sure why he's not here tonight. And if you want to, we could always carry it over to the next meeting. There might have been a misunderstanding that it was going to be on the agenda tonight. Have you heard from him, Sarah? So.
Did he want to be here when we discussed this?
I guess if you say it's okay for us to haul it off,
yeah,
it probably wouldn't matter. But
well, let me ask you. You said something about it, and I'm sorry, I was doing something else. The demo 200.
Yes, we are currently removing several houses throughout the city still.
Okay.
But that was residential property, even though it's a residential house, because it was last used as a commercial venture and in the commercial zone, we felt that it would not apply to the demo 200.
Okay.
As I stated, we, in the last 2 to 3 years, we have assisted other individuals, but I don't believe we've done any assistance probably for the last 12 months.
Okay.
The last one being the ramp behind the building on Haney Avenue.
Well, the thing that bothers me about this is that once we open the door again, if we have in fact stopped, at least it's been 12 months, right?
Yes.
It's been a year.
How long does he have to tear it down if we don't assist him? Hadn't he already been warned?
He's been to the courts several times. He did have to get the design review board's approval, which he received, I want to say, I think it was in January, maybe February at the latest. So he is under court order to get the building down as quickly as possible, as we feel it's a safety hazard.
Yeah, it needs to come down.
You know, again, once we open that door back up again, how are you going to say no to the next person and the next person that wants this?
I agree.
It's a nice thing to do, but, I mean, how about the time it does take of our employees and the associated costs with that?
Well, what does this letter mean when it says... The city intends to discharge its duties under the applicable codes and law.
In other words, he has been told that the building has to come down.
Okay. But if he doesn't take it down, then it means what?
I'd have to ask our attorney about that, but he has gone to court.
The last time I looked at the code, the city has the option to tear the building down themselves and then put a lien against the property to be reimbursed for whatever it costs the city to do that. Is that right? Yeah, thank you.
So if he doesn't do anything, it looks like we may be moving it anyway and just charging him for it. Is that right?
But we'd be charging the actual cost associated with it. He's not wanting us to do it for that. He's wanting to do it for $200.
Well, he wants to build some what looks like some real nice places there, depending on your view of it. So I think that he's probably go ahead, but I think it's a policy decision we've got to decide, and this would open the door again. And I'm not really in favor of opening that door again.
I really thought we had already made that decision as well.
I kind of thought we did too.
Yeah. And I remember the specific event that precipitated.
Okay. So for that reason, I'm not in favor of it. I wish him well. He's done a beautiful job with his facilities, his buildings on Lawrence. Okay, what's the consensus here?
I think given the cost of commercial property, he can afford to tear it down myself, so.
All right. So what I'm hearing is we go debt back and we send that messenger back to say no.
I don't hear any objection.
Okay. Don't kill the messenger.
That's right.
Okay.
Hey, my goodness. We're on time.
Mm-hmm. That's a fun. You want to take just a couple minutes, or you want to take over right ahead?
Anybody need to take a break, short break?
We got 3 minutes.
I think I will.
Meeting, Aiken City Council meeting on March 26th. We appreciate you being here with us. And if you would stand, if you desire to stand for our prayer and a pledge. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for the many blessings you give us, the beauty of the day, and the citizens that we have that participate in our government process. We appreciate that so much. We thank you for our staff and our employees and our council members. Be with us this evening as we talk about the items on our agenda and help us, give us wisdom, give us guidance as to the decisions we would make. And we would hope that we would make those decisions that would be pleasing to you and also that would be positive for all of our citizens. And we give you the glory, the honor for this. In your son's name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions to the agenda?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I'd like to ask that Council would consider deleting the first item under petitions and requests. This is with the university. They wanted to talk to City Council concerning the proposed convocation center. They talked to them after the agenda went out. In fact, it was just a few hours after it went out. And they don't feel like they have all the answers to bring to Council tonight. So they are going to be meeting with our staff on this week to discuss various items that would relate to this. And so therefore, they have asked that this be pulled until the next meeting.
Okay. Anything else? If not, do we have a motion to accept the agenda as approved, as modified?
So moved, Mr. Mayor, that we accept the agenda with the item pulled out.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Pass this unanimously. Next item, the minutes. The consideration of the minutes of the work session, the regular meeting of March 12th, 2007. Any discussion? If not, do we have a motion and a second?
Move accept the minutes, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passage unanimously. Under old business, first item is appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. LeDuc, please.
We have 8 pending appointments, and there are 4 of them before you tonight. Mayor Cavanaugh would like to have the reappointment of Tom Abbott to the Arts Commission. Councilman Clyburn would like to recommend the reappointment of Stephen Anaclario to the Design Review Board, and Wendy Bryce to the Accommodation Tax Committee. The Accommodation Tax Committee, you had approved Gloria Dunbar earlier, but after sending this recommendation to the state, they did not feel that she had met the qualifications or the guidelines for that area, and so she is asking that Wendy Bryce be accepted as a replacement. And then Councilwoman Waters would like to have 2 reappointments. One's Neil Shaw to the Accommodation Tax Committee and the reappointment of Ann Lattimore to the Arts Commission. These are the 4 appointments pending before you tonight.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion? A second?
I so move, Mr. Mayor, that we approve these appointments.
Okay. I'll second it. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Item 2 is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to annex 0.94 acres on Richland Avenue West.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir.
If I could, please, I would like to recommend a reappointment tonight.
Sure. Fine. I didn't ask.
I would like to recommend the reappointment of Charles Newton to the Environmental Committee, please.
Charles Newton. Okay. Are there any others? Okay. So that'll be on the agenda next meeting. Okay, this second item is a second reading and public hearing with ordinance to annex 0.94 acres on Richland Avenue West. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. It's an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the City of Aiken, certain property consisting of 0.94 acres of land, more or less, owned by Liza Incorporated, and to zone the same general business. This appeared before at the last meeting, and there was a lot of discussion concerning the sign, and that's probably still the major item. That the sign that was placed there originally when it was Comfort Suites, it's now Quality Inn Suites, was built. They put the sign on the neighboring property because the sign size and regulations that we asked at the time was not what they wanted for their sign. Mr. Holly, representing them, has asked that in item number 4 that you consider the new language here, that the freestanding sign for the adjacent motel be removed from the area to be annexed, which is what it originally said, and then the added language was, or that the owner of the subject property conveyed the area on which the sign is located to the owner of the adjacent motel. So if they went with that item, the sign would still remain. It would just be conveyed to the other adjoining property. So again, there's the item that the Planning Commission had a lot of discussion on, and which is here for you to discuss tonight. The other items that are on the condition are basically what you had before. And so for your consideration tonight, this is the second reading of an ordinance and public hearing to annex 0.94 acres on Richland Avenue West of the Huddle House as general business.
Okay, before we go to the public hearing, let me ask a question. It might be a dumb question, but anyway, that sign, if it remains on that lot, that's going to interfere with whatever goes on that lot, isn't it? In other words, the sign's got to come down one way or the other.
The way it is written right now on condition number 4 would be the sign would be either A, removed, or B, they would convey it to the other property owner, and therefore it would no longer be on the subject property.
It wouldn't be on the subject property, but I guess my question is, isn't it going to interfere with what goes on that property if it stays where it looks like it's located?
Mr. Mayor, Jim Holly, attorney for the owner and proposing annexation. It would be my understanding, subject to my client's approval, that whatever goes there would be designed around that sign. That, as Mr. LeDuc indicated, that sign site would actually become part of the adjoining property and not part of this property, and therefore whatever is designed there would have to be designed in such a way as to not interfere with that sign that's located there now. And I assume there, of course, has to have site plan review during the development process if that comes forth.
Okay. So if it stays the way it's written here, it's either or.
Yes, sir. Yes.
So how is that going to be resolved?
Well, it'll be up to the owner and the adjacent property owner. Either the sign would be one option, perhaps, is physically remove it. If that can be accomplished reasonably, the other option is to convey it to the motel, which is located in the city, and at that point it should become subject to the city's sign regulations as far as existing signs.
Okay, so that's something that will be worked out, no problems, right?
Yes.
It's not something we have to decide here which way it's going,
right?
But if we prove it the way it is, and that's what you're asking for.
Yes, yes.
Then that will be worked out.
Yes, sir.
By the two parties.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Just so it's clear, the ordinance gives them 180 days to work those details out. If they don't work it out within the 180 days, the annexation's null and void. So they do have 6 months to work this and try to figure something out.
Okay. And thank you, Jim.
And also, with the condition four, if the sign remains and it's conveyed to the other property, then the sign would probably remain as it is.
Mm-hmm. Say that again, Roger.
Okay. If this land the sign is on is conveyed to the other property, let's say they cut out 0.02 acres, mm-hmm. Just a sliver of property, and it's joined with the other property that's there, then the sign would become part of the other property, and it would probably remain as it is today.
But the other property is in the city?
That is correct.
So wouldn't it be in contravention of our sign ordinance? Why is it a problem with one and not the other?
It would be a non-conforming use, which if something were to happen to the sign in the future, we would expect them to then become conforming.
But they built it in the first place outside the city limits, so they
to get around the law.
No. I don't know why they did. And Mr. Shaw may know the answer to the question. I don't know why they did it that way to begin with. I don't know if they just didn't have room on their property or what the problem was.
This was, of course, I'm speaking a little bit out of turn because this was before my era, but this is how it was exactly conveyed to me. There was no city ordinances that we went around when giving it. Actually, that entire piece was just all county land. And then he bought, we actually created the Comfort Suites there. We owned and operated the Comfort Suites, my family did. And when we built it, the sign, we put 14 feet beyond our curb, but it was still our land at the time. What we did and where we got into trouble is when we sold the land, he only wanted to buy the portion and leave the curb as his boundary line. And because of his financial reasons, he did not want to extend out that extra 14 feet and whatever it would be width-wise or lengthwise, but he did not want to extend that out. So as a courtesy or a favor to him and to rush the process along of actually closing, my father said, fine, we'll just leave that on our land and give you an easement towards the sign. So we were not circumventing any city regulations at any given point when the sign was established. And the only result from that is one, we had the mistake was that it was a perpetual easement and we didn't realize that until it was done. And then the second one is that we are, the way that the easement is written, we are in no way, shape, or form do we have access even to that sign. The point where we were a little bit confused was we did have in the easements that if he did any major modification to the sign, he was to let us know. When they converted to a comfort suites to a quality, which is what it is right now, we were not given any indication, no letters, no nothing. So, and we spend most of our time, we live in Atlanta, so we didn't even know that it happened. And technically, he was supposed to tell us, but he didn't tell us. And that's, we don't know how far we can get. I mean, I've spoken to attorneys about that, but there's only so far that you're going to be able to get with that as a reason. So sort of, he circumvented us. We did not circumvent the system, but in the end, I'm just stuck with this one piece that I can't control, and it's just 14 feet this way out. So it is, technically, it is just a sliver of land that we're trying to say, okay, fine, then just take the whole thing. Then what we had discussed is in the background, whenever it does happen right now, the city has absolutely no rights, nor will it have any rights to that sign ever, the way that it is, even though it's on my land and I don't care, I'd give it to you if you wanted it. But but if we do it this way, it's, as we discussed, it's just sort of a fight for another day. We go ahead and let it get into his land, and however it works with your city regulations, if that parcel just becomes a parcel of his larger parcel, and then he's forced to commence with your regulations or whatever, or in the future, if he does want to do something, you guys probably would be able to keep better tabs, obviously, if he wanted to do something in the future. But at least this way, you have sort of a shot at getting it back down to your regulation sizes and measurements, as opposed to it being there perpetually as it is right now. So this is the one shot that sort of we all have.
Okay. And just so it's clear, yes, council certainly would be within their rights to require this sign to be conforming to our city sign ordinance as a condition of the approval of this annexation. But if they're not able to comply with that condition, you will in effect not be able to annex this property because they can't comply with your requirement. And then you've still got a non-conforming sign, and you don't have any possibility of getting it to a conforming status at any point in the future. At least this way, if a car runs over it and knocks it down, they've got to build a conforming sign when it comes back.
Good idea, Gary.
I'm not giving anybody advice to do that, okay? Just so the record's clear.
So we're leaving it either or.
Yep.
Right.
That's what they've requested.
Okay.
And then you can meet all the other things, the other five things or six things. They're fine.
Correct. The other ones, as stated as they are right now, I don't think that anybody has any issues with any of them.
All right.
Okay. Very good. Okay. This is a second reading and public hearing. And so if there's anyone in the audience who would like to speak on this issue, you may do so. Just come up to the mic and give us your name and address. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration. Wait just a minute.
I didn't know if you were going to talk about Whiskey Road here. That's what I'm talking about.
Sir?
It's the next
section of Whiskey Road.
No, not yet. No, that's on the list. That's on the list. Okay, this issue then is back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm a little perplexed by number four, but you feel like you can get this worked out, Jim? That
yes, ma'am.
You do.
Without this option, we would be stuck, and there'd be no development.
Okay. All right. Could I go ahead and make a motion, and
certainly.
Then if there are other discussions, we could do it after the session.
Yes, certainly. Yeah.
Okay. I would like to move that we approve this on second reading with all of the conditions as listed from the Planning Commission, with the understanding that every effort would be made to work on that sign.
Mr. Mayor, if I could clarify the motion just a touch, because these conditions actually are a little different than what the Planning Commission recommended. If I could ask you simply to move to approve the ordinance as presented in the City Council agenda package.
Okay, with the seven that are listed on the ordinance?
Yes, ma'am, that's correct.
Okay, those are the ones I'm looking at.
That's the ones I'm talking about, too.
Okay.
But those do differ from the Planning Commission.
The annexation is...
The language that you see in bold, that language was added, if you look at the ordinance, when you look under Section 1 of the ordinance, you'll see the various conditions. And the bold language was added from the time that Council approved this on first reading.
Right. I saw the difference. I'm referring to the one on the first page of the ordinance and going to the back of the, to those conditions.
Right.
Mr. Mayor, I'd second.
Yes. Okay. We have a motion and second. Any discussion? No discussion. Call for the question. All approval for this? Okay. Passes unanimously. Item 3 is a second reading public hearing on ordinance to annex Whiskey Road right away. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the City of Aiken, certain property known as a portion of Whiskey Road, South Carolina 19. We've been discussing this for several years, and we've tried to get more action by the Highway Department to take more control of that road. We have been asked by the Highway Patrol to take enforcement action on it, but the next level would be the county enforcement. By approving this tonight, it would allow us to go ahead and provide enforcement action, have control over the traffic signals that are right now controlled out of Columbia, as is everything else. Last time I talked to them, this is the Highway Department, they said that we get down there every 3 to 5 years to make any adjustments to the traffic signals, but if you'd like us to get down there maybe on a yearly basis to look at the traffic signals, we might be able to do that if you provide us with more up-to-date traffic counts on a regular basis.
even on the Wigan maintenance, if a traffic signal goes out, you have to call Columbia, and hopefully they'll get down there within the next few days to take any action. By annexing this one area, we would then be able to do the things that council has asked us to do over the last several years. Currently, all of Whiskey Road from approximately where Shoney's is at currently south is outside the city limits. I know the Aiken Standard had a nice editorial in support of this for all the reasons that I just gave. The majority of the road area on either side is in the city or has an agreement to be in the city. So we're asking tonight that City Council consider, after it went to the Planning Commission, who voted unanimously to approve this, that you consider the annexation of Whiskey Road from Millbrook Avenue, where Shoney's is at, south to the Talitha Church Road intersection.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is a second reading and public hearing, so if anyone in the audience would like to speak on this, you certainly may do so.
Well, my name is Ed Smith. I live at 508 Heathwood Drive. I'm in the county, but my house borders Whiskey Road right across the street from Chili's. The question that I'm going to ask the council is, the right-of-way where the ditches and everything else and the water that flows over from Brookhaven will be taken care of. The ditch itself is always troublesome, all the way down from Whiskey Road, all the way down to where it needs to be maintained, it needs to be cut. Mid-year, it looks like a rag trap through there. If the city's willing to maintain that ditch and everything else and the water flow from Brookhaven, what happens? Brookhaven, there are stores there at Brookhaven. We didn't have no problem with no flood area on my house or my neighbor's house. Once that subdivision was put in or that stores were put in, we have flooding in both my house and my neighbor's house. It comes across the street from Whiskey Road. You've got a big drainage ditch right there. It comes from the school district and everything else right over down the way. If you get a heavy rainfall and you look at the school district pond, there's not a drop in it. Their easement pond, not a drop in it. If you look where the drainage line is, it's close to the bottom of the thing. It's only got one way to go. That's across Whiskey Road into my subdivision. I'm in Elmwood Park subdivision.
Right, right.
And if you could maintain the ditch and everything else and smooth it out, I'd be glad to cut up my lawnmower. But right now, I got a big old crevice in there, and I can't cut it. And also right there at Dorley Road, that big ditch right there, that fills up. You got dead animal debris in there and everything else. If you're going to maintain that, I'm not against it at all. But all that needs to be maintained.
Ed, where's the one you just mentioned, Doherty Road?
Doherty,
whereabouts on Doherty?
Well, the right across the street from Doherty Road there.
Oh, yeah.
Where the bowling alley is,
you got that
big ditch through there.
Oh, yeah.
There's been cars making turns, falling in the ditch, and everything else. We need some kind of guardrail or something else, because that's a 5-foot ditch right there. And if you look along that, all that needs to be filled in and maintained right, because right now it's a hazard.
Well, if the city gets control of that, the city will do the best possible job.
Okay, next question.
Anything better than what it is now.
Okay, next question is that once you maintain the easement or get the easement, what is your next function? Are you going to come after our subdivision and everything?
Let me, if you don't mind, I'll try to answer both those questions. I talked to the highway department, and they asked me the same question. Well, are you going to then go ahead and start maintaining Whiskey Road? The intent is that the actual maintenance of the road infrastructure itself, the ditches, the road, would still be under their purview because it's a state South Carolina 19 road. What the commitment the city council has made, and this was several years ago, is we want to go ahead, and if you look at from Centennial Parkway or Corporate Parkway north to McDonald's, we fill the ditches in, we put sidewalk there, we put street trees in there, curb and gutter. We want to go ahead and continue that same type of cross section all the way down eventually to Talitha Church Road, which would mean we'd be filling the ditches. And we stopped at that point in time because large sections were not in the city south of that area. So we have money right now, I believe it's $1 million in our 1-cent sales tax, plus we've been getting some what we call iced tea money from the ARCH program that we've been using to supplement. And so the intent was to eventually go down all the way, fill the ditches in, put sidewalks in, put the street trees in, try to close up some of the driveways as best as possible throughout that area. That's probably going to take about, I'd say at least 5 years, if not more, 10 years, because we'd do a little section at a time. The second question is, what would happen to your property? The city has current agreements with some adjacent property owners that have requested water and sewer since 1990, that we would consider the possible annexation. We'd have to look at each case individually, whether or not City Council would want to do that. But that's not going to come at this point in time. It may come several months later. College Acres spoke to us at the last meeting. They were concerned with some of the properties that they have in their service district. We would certainly have to talk to them about how that would all work out. In 1992, the gas station that's at the corner of Powder House and Whiskey Road asked for our services. We worked out an agreement with them. I was not city manager at the time, so I have to assume it was a fair agreement, and we paid them $3,500 for bringing it into the city. So if we did look at their area, we'd have to go ahead and compensate them in some fashion for that annexation. Their area, I believe, ends, it goes from Hunter's Glen Road on up to Powder House, and is on the east side of Whiskey Road. But otherwise, I don't believe any of Elmwood Park has an assigned agreement with the city of Aiken, and therefore you would not be annexed into the city unless you wanted to become part of the city or other properties along the way.
Okay, if you're going all the way down to Tenth Church Road, would you be then infringing on New Wellington's water district onto the hotel?
We have agreements with New Wellington Water District on that entire area.
Okay. So then once you annex that, then you're going to annex the hotel into the state limits too then, because you have an agreement with us, with the hotel owner.
Yes, we would.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Okay. Y'all have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. Anyone else like to speak? Okay.
I'm Dale Stevens at 411 Heathwood Drive, also in Elmwood Park. I'm one of your neighbors. I'm in the county right beside you, and we appreciate having you as a neighbor. You're a good neighbor, and as the council's deliberation shows, you're responsible neighbors also, and we really appreciate that. But just like a neighbor, I enjoy you as a neighbor, but I do not care for y'all to move in my front yard. You know, I like you as a neighbor, but I don't want you as a roomer, and I just kind of wanted to set that straight, that I want to keep you as a neighbor, but not as part of my house. But thank you.
Thank you, Dale.
And just to reiterate, South Carolina state law would not allow us to annex an area unless 75% or more of the individuals requested us to annex an area, or unless we had some prior agreements with those individuals based on services that we have provided sometime in the past.
Well, let me ask you a question based on what you just said then.
Can we have
my name is Larry White. I live at 2528 Golden Bridge Court in Hunter's Glen. If 75% of the residents in Hunter's Glen, once you annex Whiskey Road and you annex all the properties adjacent to Whiskey Road, if 75% of those people want to be annexed, then you would annex the entire section into the city limits?
That had to be a question the council would have to answer. They've looked at it both ways in the past. The last time was Gem Lakes, where we had about 85% of the individuals within that area sign a petition to come into the city, and they decided to leave the other 15% outside the city.
Well, Hunter's Glen has water service from Carolina Water, and all the water lines in Hunter's Glen are 2-inch lines. Okay, the city will not connect to 2-inch lines. They have to have 3-inch lines. So if 75% of the residents in Hunter's Glen wanted to come into the city of Aiken, you would annex us, but you would not provide us water. We would not probably not provide us sewer because we're all on septics. So the only advantage to us to be an annex in the city of Aiken is to pay more city taxes. That's the only advantage we have for the city. Anyway, let me. You said you would have better enforcement of traffic along Hunter's, along Whiskey Road. Does that mean you would hire more police or public safety personnel to patrol this area?
We would have to look at that. You know, initially we would use the existing force that we have. They're already traveling on Whiskey Road right now, but we cannot provide any assistance unless we're asked to by the county or the state. So even if there's a traffic accident, the state highway department would generally have to respond and come down, and we don't issue any ticketing. Therefore, there is no enforcement action. Probably non-existent on there right now. So if it was under our control, we would start some enforcement action.
Also, the properties adjacent to Whiskey Road, the majority of them are zoned in the county as UD. What would the zoning be in the city? Would that change?
Well, again, the areas adjacent to Whiskey Road are not part of the question right now.
Yeah.
And the only areas that I know that we have agreements for potential annexation is South Meadows, which would then be residential. All the other areas that are currently not inside the city would stay outside the city.
But it would make it easier for them to be annexed in the city if you had annexed Whiskey Road. Would it not, all adjacent properties to Whiskey Road?
Again, if they would want to.
Okay.
And you can't
force annexation of the city.
That is correct.
All right.
Well, it's again, it's that formula that Roger told you. If 75% of you wanted it.
So if 75% of the property owners along Whiskey Road wanted to be annexed, you would annex everybody along Whiskey Road?
Well, it would have to be of your development.
Okay. And the last question I have is, you wanted to extend on Whiskey Road down to Talitha Church Road, and one of the reasons you stated was to be able to better control the traffic lights. From Powder House Road south, there's only two traffic lights.
Mm-hmm.
Why, I don't understand why you want to go all the way down to Talitha Church Road.
Because that is our limit of our utility system. That's where our system ends right now.
Okay.
We're currently serving South Meadows and the Commons across the street.
Yes.
We're currently serving that with water.
Super. But utilities go all the way down to Talitha Church Road then?
That is correct.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Anyone else like to speak on the issue? If not, it's back to City Council for consideration. We have a motion and second.
Mr. Mayor, I'm pleased to move that we approve this ordinance to annex Whiskey Road right away.
Okay. I'm pleased to second it. Any other discussion? Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Item 4 is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to adjust City Council salaries. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance amending Section 2-36 of the City Code of the City of Aiken to amend the salaries of the Mayor Pro Tem, and the members of Council. As we discussed on more than one occasion, City Council salaries have not been adjusted, to my knowledge, except for some cost of living increases over the last decade or more. Every year the city researches and does a classification and compensation analysis of 25% of our workforce. And some of those classifications, and a classification is a category that individuals are placed in, like public safety officers are in one category, sergeants within the police force would be another category, lieutenants, captains, and we go ahead and look throughout the CSRA area, and we look statewide as to how do our salaries compare to the salaries currently being provided throughout the state. This year we decided we'd go ahead and re-look at City Council. We did a survey. We looked at 10 different cities, anywhere from Florence, Goose Creek, Hilton Head, Mount Pleasant, Myrtle Beach, North Augusta, Orangeburg, Spartanburg, Buford, and Rock Hill. All of them either similar size or the number of people they serve. We serve right now around 75,000 individuals in our community with some sort of service. That service, in most cases, is
is water, but it's also fire, it's recreation. Over half our participants' recreation is outside the city of Aiken. So when we look at our town, which is around 30,000, we're actually serving an area much, much larger. Just like if you look at Myrtle Beach, which is a city, Myrtle Beach is smaller than the city of Aiken with their permanent population. Obviously, Myrtle Beach during the summertime gets much larger. Well, our permanent area that we serve is much larger, and if we look at a comparison of our budget compared to other cities that I named here, our budget is very similar. Looking at this, the range for council members range from $10,940, actually $15,000 on the high end, down to $5,420 at the low end. The average of all these communities was $8,718. When we looked at the mayor's salary, again, it went up to $24,000, down to Buford was $6,000, and again, an average of $14,681. We felt that you really needed to increase your pay. I know it's not something that council likes to discuss and talk about. It's a very sensitive and difficult subject. But on a fairness basis, as far as what you really earn, based on the fact that you come at least twice a month, several times you're in meetings three or four times a month. I know you're on call to many events, of which you have to pay for the privilege of going to those events. Plus driving a personal car at no reimbursement from the city, that this is more than fair. So we are recommending to you that city council salaries be increased after the November election. You know, they wouldn't take effect until after that election, to $9,000 for council members, $15,000 for the mayors, and $12,000 for the mayor pro tem. Now, by doing that, you're just going to be average. And I'll personally say that I think you all are above average. We have an above average town, but this will at least bring you up to the average throughout the state for those 10 cities. This was approved on first reading. This is a second reading and public hearing. Again, there was a nice editorial in support of this in the Aiken Standard, I think it was last week. So we do recommend the salary increase to City Council.
Thank you, sir. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance. So if there's anyone in the audience that wants to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration. Do we have a motion and a second?
I move, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay, who's that?
Dick.
You all point at each other. Okay. Don Wells. Okay. Okay, any discussion?
Well, I'll have something to say, and I'm just repeating myself for the minutes, okay? I know you all hear. I frankly feel that there are plenty of people that are willing to serve on City Council at the salary we have. I think if we need money to attend special events, that is not the taxpayer's responsibility, that most of those events are tax-deductible events if it's a substantial amount of money. I find that I'm proud that our salaries are lower than all these places. I think it's a great thing that we've been willing to work on City Council. And frankly, we get right now $3,800 a year. That really does cover my expenses as far as actual gas, I think, and transfer. I mean, it's a business expense. I take it off my income tax. Transportation costs. Whatever's not covered is deductible. So I really don't see the need. I just think it's a good example if we are lower than everyone else. I'm proud of that.
Okay. Thank you, Jane.
Does this make us higher than most, or
no?
Average.
Well, Beverly, you can see the.
It makes us higher than all but two.
You can see the survey here.
Mm-hmm. A three, because one's the same.
You know, having the privilege of being on the municipal board, I hear and talk to a lot of cities, and every time I go to a meeting, and some of y'all go to meetings as well, but usually someone at least will come up to us and say, hey, what's Aiken doing now? We are seen, the city is seen as one of the lead innovative cities in South Carolina. And I think you can see why. Everybody lives around here knows that. We see people coming in. We're either one or two or three of the fastest growing cities. We meet, all of us do this, we meet with people who are in the six figures all the time to discuss city issues, college issues, all kinds of issues. I think it's fair that at least city council gets an average salary of the cities that are approximately our size and population and all those things that Mr. LeDuc mentioned. Certainly we could go down to zero if we wanted to, but I think we all put in a lot of time. I know I have anywhere from 300 to 400 meetings a year, and that's just the ones that I kind of keep track of. But I don't have to serve it. I mean, I didn't take this job to make any money. But it is nice to at least have a salary that can cover your bills and cover your expenses. And so I think this is a long time coming. I support it. I think it's the right thing to do. I've had citizens ask me from years back, over 21 years now, you know, what do you make as a salary? And as mayor, no one's ever said less than $40,000. And I just kind of laugh, you know. I say, what do you think I'm making? So anyway, I've said enough about it. I think it's fair, maybe even less than fair, but at least it gets it up to a reasonable amount of salary for the work that we do. Any other comments?
I'll tell you what I did, and I don't know how to trust my math without a calculator here tonight, but I figured up what it would cost per year to do the increase.
To do what?
To increase it to where we are going to vote tonight, and it came to right at $34,000 to increase the five members of council, the mayor pro tem and the mayor, for a year. That would be the increased amount. I guess my next thought would be, could we repair a road, or is that the difference in raising for going up on the water rates or garbage pickup rates? I mean, how minuscule is this, or how large is this amount of money when we look at services that we have to pay for or ask citizens to pay for in the budget? I'm looking at that and wondering how small or how large is this compared to other things that we face in the budget. And in saying that, I want to say that when I ran for council, when I did run, I didn't even know that council was being paid at the time. I mean, I didn't know that there was pay. I don't think you really look at how much you're getting paid when you run for council. I think you do it because you want to serve and you want to try to make a difference. And I want to say that up front, but I do think that it is time consuming, and it has been for me. And I think that time is worth something.
Okay, any other comments? I think we all ran for council and because we wanted to try to make a difference. And hopefully we are making a difference. And nobody, definitely I agree with you, nobody ran for council to make a lot of money. And it's a good thing. Okay, if there are no other questions, all in favor, show of hands, please. Opposed? Okay, passes 6-1. First item under new business, the first reading of an ordinance to amend the City of Aiken Employment Retirement Plan. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. While we were doing this other one, we looked at the retirement plan we had and asked our actuary, since it was 1997 or 10 years ago that we instituted the plan for retirement, if any adjustment needed to be made. He looked at it and felt an increase based on a 4.1% compound annual interest of over that last 10-year period be adjusted, which would state that anybody between serving 8 years and 12 years would not receive retirement, would receive a lump sum payment at the chart that you have there. 8 years, $3,750, 9 years, $3,900, goes up to $4,200. If you have served over 12 years, then the council members get currently $100 per month, that go up to $150 per month, and then $5 for each year thereafter. It'd go up to $7.50 per month for every year over 12 years. So it's essentially, it's a 50% increase over what it was when it was initiated. Again, this was the reason we didn't have it at the time at the salaries is we wanted an actuary to actually look at it, and this is his recommendation. So before you tonight, this is an ordinance amending Section 11 of the City of Aiken Employees Retirement Plan to amend the retirement benefits of the mayor and the members of City Council.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor.
Okay. I'll second it. Any discussion?
Well, this is unfortunately, this is what I really have to question a little bit because I still come back to my term limits idea. I have the same feeling about our Congress and everyone else. I do not believe that we should have a pension. I'm just against it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Dick. Any other comments?
Does this pension begin when someone leaves City Council?
That's correct.
I have to echo the belief that I don't think council members should receive pensions.
When was this put into effect, Roger? Do you remember?
10 years ago, 1997.
Yeah. Okay. And this is the first change to it.
That's correct.
Okay.
And there's really no change other than increasing the benefits.
Well, yeah. I'm sorry. That's what I meant.
And I, Mr. Mayor, I would make the argument that obviously those people who've served under those terms, there would be a grandfather clause and they would be entitled to it. But I certainly. Not that I expect to ever be around that long, but I don't think that new people coming on council should ever expect a pension.
And Councilwoman Waters, maybe I gave you the wrong answer, or maybe there's a misunderstanding. It's upon retirement, but they have to reach at least age 60. To receive this.
And have served 12 years.
And served 12 years. So if somebody started at age 40, served 12 years, and left the City Council at the age of 52, they'd have to wait till age 60 before they start receiving it.
Thank you.
How many years do you think is term limit? Is it 8, 12?
I advocated when I joined the council 8 years. Still believe that that's a good limit. Although I recognize we got a lot of good experience on this council.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other comments? If not, sure.
Pardon me. Take that phone away from the mayor. I turned it off.
Forget to turn it off.
Turn off the ball game.
Pardon. Okay, back to business. Where were we? Are there any other comments about this?
You're ready for a vote.
I'm ready for a vote. Okay. All in favor, show of hands, please. Okay. Opposed? Okay. passes 5-2. Second item under new business, first reading of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance concerning planned commercial zones and self-storage units. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance amending the use table at section 3.1.6 of the City of Aiken zoning ordinance regarding the allowance of self-service storage facilities in the planned commercial district. The Planning Commission reviewed this and voted unanimously to bring this to City Council. Now, there might be some discussion tonight of how does this affect a particular property. This has nothing to do with a particular property, but it just allows a landowner or developer to put together a planned commercial, and within that, they could have storage. Now, City Council, once they get this planned commercial development, has the ability to approve it, deny it, make any changes to it. Gives you the latitude to do whatever you want. So this, even though it's allowed, does not mean that you have to allow it. So if there's a particular area that the developer asked for it and you feel it's not appropriate for that area, then you have the right to say no. So all this does is gives the ability for a landowner to go ahead and ask for it. So again, we're amending this to allow self-service storage, mini warehouses, as a permitted use if approved through the concept plan by City Council after Planning Commission review. This is the first reading of this ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance to allow self-storage in planned commercial zones. Upon your consideration, a second reading and public hearing would be held.
Okay, thank you, sir. Let me ask a question. Is anyone else who wants to speak on this or any other of these first readings?
I think there's
okay,
a group.
Okay, let's suspend the rules then so that legally we can allow you to do that. I move that we do that.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, all in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Okay. So did someone want to speak on this particular one? Okay.
And again, this is not at any particular property. This is just whether or not this is going to be allowed in the planned commercial.
Yeah, but let me clarify something. This wouldn't be coming up at all if a particular property didn't want to do this, right? You didn't bring it up. Ed didn't bring it up.
No, that is correct.
Okay.
My name is Sharon Glover. I live on Oriole Street. And I said about 2 months ago, a guy came by with a petition. Nobody signed it, okay? Mm-hmm. And he kept coming back, and he kept coming back. And we kept telling him that we like our little piece of wood in the backyard. We like our squirrels. We like our trees. We like everything just the way it is. But he told us that he would put in the storage units. We don't want storage units. Mm-hmm. Because storage units sometimes have stolen goods on them. Sometimes meth perhaps get them, and we just don't need any problems. So that's why we're asking your help to help us not to get no sewage in our backyards.
Now, Shirley, excuse me.
Sherry.
Was this Sherry. Someone next door to you or in back of you? Or?
No, the guy came from Augusta, Georgia, and he came from house to house with a petition. But he did, like he told her, that I said yes, and I didn't say yes. Oh my goodness. That he'll tell me
that neighbor, that neighbor, yes, and we all got together just by accident, and we talked about it, and we didn't want it.
My goodness,
how
disingenuous.
Okay, did someone, let me ask another question. Did someone in the area want it?
No.
I mean, why was this person asking the question?
He owns the land.
Right, he owns the land. I'm sorry, my name is Yvonne DeBean, and I reside at 614 Oriole Street. And the guy that she's referring to is the developer himself. He actually owns the property.
Okay. He's interested in
coming in and actually building storage facilities in that particular area. He did, however, also introduce the idea of perhaps building apartments, an apartment complex. But, of course, he gave us a laundry list of reasons why we needed to allow the storage facilities in our area. And one of the things that he suggested was that it would be less traffic if, in fact, we allow the storage facilities. Well, the reality of it is we're already on a street where we're a bypass from the 118 to Pine Log Road. So there's already a lot of traffic. So that's not a concern for us. The reality is when you look at the statistics, You know, research shows that storage facilities are breeding grounds for crime and other activities, not to mention they affect property values. I realize I sound emotional, and I apologize, but I just purchased my home in June of last year. So I didn't, not in a million years did I think that I would have to deal with this issue at all, even. You know, I think we live in a really nice neighborhood. I have wonderful neighbors, and it's really quiet, and in spite of the traffic that comes through there, it's a really good neighborhood. And storage facilities, you know, we went around from door to door with the petition, and, you know, all of the homeowners, they're all agreeing that they don't want the storage facilities in the area.
And you shouldn't change my vote to tell me that if I do not vote for the storage facility, that you will build an apartment, then sell the apartments to make it Section 8. I don't like that idea at all.
My goodness.
You shouldn't tell me.
And who is telling people that? This gentleman? This man telling people that?
Yeah.
That's what I understood, too. Okay. From other folks.
When
yeah. Other folks.
I told him, I said, this is my option. These are the options. And then when I said, why not apartments? Because I think they should be upstairs. They can't build in a way for the city of Hounds Lake or anywhere. He said, well, I'm selling. And selling this
Section 8. Yeah. I think that's probably a form of
intimidation
or scare tactic to get you to agree to the...
No.
Yeah. And we had more people to come out, but last time we got a phone call to say not to bring them out, so we told the rest of them to stay away this time, so we could have flooded the place because the papers that we have are all the way around the park. Mm-hmm. We've got people all the way around the Cardinal Wind place that supporting this, that we do not want storage units.
How many signatures are there on that, Ms. Coleman?
This particular piece of paper, we got tired. We got 42 signatures.
But they're all in that neighborhood.
Yes, they're all in the neighborhood.
And we also got Dr. Green's wife, but she's going through a situation right now. But she told us she also had her support.
No. Can we go back to a basic question, I think? Who started this? Who wants this to happen?
The developer.
Yeah. David Miles?
EDM Development, David Miles. Right.
Is he here tonight?
He was here last time.
He was at the Planning Commission meeting, but he's not here tonight. I don't know that he's here tonight.
Well, I don't know why we're talking about it exactly.
Yeah.
I know it went through planning.
I was at the meeting, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
And I can explain that it was very, very, they constructed it so that, as we said tonight, we're only discussing the idea of granting this capability in planned commercial. We mustn't think about what might happen in the future. But I personally think that we've got a deal where someone is looking for this specifically, came, requested the change, which we do. We accept that being something to consider. But I think the strategy and tactics that have been used have not been very good. I would also like to say, and this is a point that we should all know, that the property is actually zoned right now as multifamily.
It is.
That's not planned commercial.
It's not planned commercial. It's zoned multifamily. So what we're really in is a chain reaction here. First, we have to change our ordinance to allow the possibility in planned commercial. Then the owner of the property has to come before the Planning Commission, I believe, and ask that it be rezoned to planned commercial. And then from that, we have to then consider the change in zoning and also consider whether the concept plan should allow a storage unit. Right. Have I covered it all?
Right. Thank you.
Very good.
In other words, staff didn't come up with this recommendation. The Planning Commission and its action agenda didn't come up with this. This was promulgated by an individual who wants us to look at that.
And actually, part of that, I got to say, is it would probably be an extremely difficult property to build multifamily on. It's really like a deep ravine.
But he can now by right.
He can by right, but it would be very costly to do so, I think, because of the, he would really have to cut everything down. He would really have to do some... That's a gully down there at the bottom.
No.
It's a very deep gully.
Well, let me just personally say, Sherry and Yvonne, hearing your comments, I don't know how to describe how I feel with someone that should want to be a partner with residents, but yet he uses intimidation tactics. His integrity is an issue, because for someone to tell you one thing and tell another neighbor another thing when you have not said these things, it's an integrity type of issue. And that concerns me that anybody would want to be a part of a community using those kinds of tactics, no matter who it is.
We have other people on the and that's our concern, is what happens to them. Some of them have been there 30 years, and some of them are afraid if something comes in the bag, and they've already lost their husband, who's going to look out for us? And that's why we're here today, because we're their only hope.
Right.
So we can sit there and let them bring in anything they want to. If y'all start hearing that we need police, at least we try.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I would really like to just make another point, and thank you very much.
Thank you, ladies.
Showing up. And if we divorce ourselves from the real issue, just say on its merits, do we want to do this? Without any consideration, and I still don't see any particular sense in it. There was no need for it within the city limits at any other time. And it happens, we got a specific case that's pushing this. And I think we really ought to just table it and consider it.
It would be difficult for me to support this tonight, not knowing where all the planned commercial zones are, to know how close they are to other undesirable areas. And there's not a...
Within the city, I think there is only one storage area. Isn't that correct? And it's, is it the one on Pine Log?
Well, I know there's one on Buford Street near York.
One on Rutland.
One on Pine Log.
Rutland.
Yeah, on Rutland.
On Rutland. Mm-hmm.
But is it zoned like industrial or?
Probably. Because it's right next to railroad tracks.
That's a very good point. I really think that this use is appropriate in an industrial, limited manufacturing, light industrial zone. It's not a transitional use between houses, and I just don't think it's appropriate. But when it messes up a neighborhood and the neighbors don't want it, I really don't think it's appropriate.
Mm-hmm. I just think we need to, if staff studies it and could come up with a good place to put these in the city, I think I would be willing to look at it. But just to do it on the whim of someone who wants to eventually come back and get a piece of property zoned to get what he wants eventually, I would like to see us move to deny the request, to deny this as being, deny that we do, just say that I don't want to amend the zoning ordinance tonight, not with this.
Let me just ask Ed Jacoby if he wants to make any comment about this, since it did go through, I hate to do it, but Ed is on the Planning Commission. Ed, you don't have to, but maybe we're missing something. Are we missing anything here?
Mr. Mayor, if I may, while he's coming up, I just my perspective for whatever it's worth. What I didn't like, I didn't realize that the use table actually limited what council could put in planned commercial zones. Really, the idea of a planned commercial zone is you ought to be able to do as much in that zone as may be appropriate given the nature of the property as that request comes before you. And the way the use tables are set up now, you don't have that option. I mean, it wouldn't be hard to envision that there would be a piece of property where you could put self-service stores that could benefit that particular neighborhood, and it would be shielded from everybody else, and it would be, you know, used in such a way that it would be beneficial. And you want to look at this particular property, maybe it doesn't work for this particular property, but there could be other properties where it would be beneficial.
Should it ever come to us, we could certainly consider it at that time.
That's correct. That's correct.
Yeah. You've got a conceptual plan. We can decide what goes in there.
Plan. But right now, if a person came to you and wanted to put these types of units in a planned commercial, they could not.
Good.
In other words, they couldn't come to you with that type of request.
Right. That's right.
And that's what I think Mr. Smith is saying. Is under the current planned commercial, it limits council's ability to look at not only this but other items that you may want to have in a planned commercial.
But we did put it in light industrial. So we made allowances for it.
Right. There's very, very few light industrial.
Limited manufacturing zone. Mm-hmm. We have lots of vacancies in those.
Mr. Joby, can you shed any light on?
I think Mr. Smith has stated it very well. Mm-hmm. I think it was our intention.
Which Mr. Smith?
Oh, I'm sorry. the attorney. Gary Smith. But in any event, I think he stated our intent very well, and I think it was exactly as Mr. LaDuca has just described. It was to give council and planning commission flexibility. And again, it was not the intent to deal with this particular geographical location, but to give the council or the planning commission the ability to apply this to other areas.
Where it's appropriate.
And that was exactly the point, Mr. Mayor, where it would be appropriate. And that could be defined, obviously, by the particular location, rather than to make a broad generalization for or against.
But, in fact, the only reason it came up is because it was
right. At the request of the developer from Augusta, who said this is his business, developing these self-storage units. I certainly was not aware of some of the tactics that he apparently has used with the neighbors. Mm-hmm. And certainly would deplore that, but I don't think that's the central issue. I think the central issue is just as it's been stated, and to give flexibility in terms of determining whether or not a self-storage unit would be appropriate in any location, not just this particular location.
Were the neighbors not allowed to speak at the Planning Commission meeting?
Yes, they did speak. Every one of them spoke against it. They did not want self-storage units there. There was much discussion about apartments. I don't think they wanted apartments there. I think, as these previous speakers have said, I think they'd like to see it remain as is.
It's a beautiful word, Seth.
Yes, it is. The question remains, if that property owner is within his rights to mm-hmm. build whatever he wishes on the present zoning, afraid that there's not very much anyone can do about that, unless they want to contest that in some legal form. But again, that was our intention.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ed. Okay. Is there anyone else who wanted to speak on the issue?
I'm Patsy Bickley, and I live at 600 Oriole Street. And it is true, if we had something built back there, we much prefer to have apartments, not a commercial piece of property. But it seems to me that it would be inappropriate if you put this into commercial, the storage facilities into the commercial zoning, because if you had something that was commercial, you know if it's a doctor's office and you know who's back there. And if it was on any piece of land. But with the storage units, how will y'all control what really goes in those if it is on city property? Can you control
Ms. Bickley,
the contents?
Ms. Bickley, what we were saying from that standpoint is if we were to vote to allow self-storage units in a planned commercial area, when a planned commercial area comes to us for approval, we then can limit the type of businesses, the the size of the business. We can limit. We can take it on an individual basis. I, for one, would never vote to put self-storage units next to a residential area in any neighborhood. And I live on Cardinal, and I certainly wouldn't vote to put it on right there at Oregon. But, you know, what this is doing is opening up an opportunity, because there may be some planned commercial areas that do not border residential areas. There may be some areas where it is currently zoned general business, and right next to it could be light industrial. Now, if someone came to us and wanted a section of that property to be zoned planned commercial, and then that gives us better control over what goes into that area. Right now, under light industrial, they could put many warehouses without even coming to us and asking us. If they were to ever put them into a planned commercial area, it would have to come before us for our approval. We could approve it or we could disapprove it. So this is the issue that we're discussing tonight, is whether or not to allow the mini warehouses in a given zone, which would be the planned commercial. It has nothing to do with any individual areas or places that it may go. But if we did give them approval on this, then they would still have to come back to us and say, we would like to put them in this plane. And as I've said before, and I don't think there's another council member on here that would vote to put a mini warehouse next to a residential area.
Oh, good. That makes us feel good. If we can be sure that y'all are going to vote for that.
Well, let's just...
Again, it was just this one gentleman that came to us, and we know, I mean, you know, maybe it's not visible to everybody else, but we know what his intentions are. And so, I mean, if he has to do this for the first step, he's going to come back to y'all. If we happen to be on vacation and not here, y'all are going to remember us.
That's right.
Right?
I'm going to remember you.
Salary up, so y'all make a difference.
Well, we appreciate that, and we'll always remember you.
Because we just want a safe, quiet neighborhood. Mm-hmm. My dad said that I was bred, born, and raised here in Aiken. I left for 7 years and came back because it's a beautiful city. So it would be nice to know that we're going to have a peaceful and safe neighborhood to live in. Okay?
Thank you,
Patsy.
Now, point of clarification, if we were to put this in planned commercial, this is a special exception. So does that have to go to the BZA?
No, it's not a special exception.
It
would be by right. It would
be by right.
It would
be by right, but the council approves it.
Okay. Yeah. And because of the...
See, planned commercial means that they don't put anything there unless we approve the concept plan.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Went back and reread the wrong sentence.
Okay. Anyone else? No one else? Okay. Do we have a motion and a second here?
We do, don't we?
No.
Did you make a motion, Beverly?
No.
I didn't make a motion.
I think Dick started to say something, and then Beverly.
All right. Who wants to make a motion?
I do. I move that we deny this on the first reading because it's not a transitional use that's appropriate in neighborhoods, and I don't think that we need. I think we need to put these people's minds at rest so they don't have to worry about this anymore. Because I know they've been worried, and I think all of you have heard. And I understand why Yvonne was so passionate. I'd be passionate too if it were in my neighborhood. I just think we need to put their minds at rest. If someone has a just fabulous plan, we can look at it in the future.
I second that.
Okay. We have a second. Any other discussion?
Mr. Mayor, I just feel like if we don't give this developer the opportunity to rezone the planned commercial, that he may build those undesirable type apartments that they can talk about. So, and I know someone in Augusta, he has done some developments in some rough areas, and I don't think this will stop him. So,
well, there's some things we don't have a whole lot of control over.
And, you know, of course, I'd like for second reading, know if we go to second reading, know if he's closed, if he even owns the property, if he's closed on the property. I don't know.
I don't know. Most of the time they don't, do it.
they know they can build what they want, right?
But if he has, my point is, he's going to do something with that property.
Let me say that I thought from all of the background on this that, in fact, he had bought it, didn't realize how deep it was, the hole, and that's why, because he was going to do apartments to begin with.
Okay.
And so that's why he switched. That's as I understood.
There's a lot of clearing of trees going on that area.
But not right there yet.
Well, no, there's some being cut.
There's some down where Autotech is going.
There's some going on this area, too.
But yeah,
yes, of course.
He cleared a pathway through the bottom, if you will, Nate. They obviously cleared a whole road.
Is there still cutting going on back in there?
Yeah.
And it's the pathway's been there for.
Doesn't the tree ordinance apply to multifamily residential?
Yes.
While reinforcing it out
yes.
there? Okay.
All they're doing is cutting down a lot of the underbrush and the undersized trees.
Okay.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor of denying this? Show of hands. Okay. Opposed? Okay. Now, in 6-1.
I will inform the developer that this has been denied. It will not go to second reading, so you don't have to come back again.
Item 3 is the first reading of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance for bed and breakfast facilities. Mr. LeDuc, please.
This is an ordinance amending section 3.3.4.C of the City of Aiken zoning ordinance regarding bed and breakfast meeting facilities. This came to you several months ago. In fact, I think it was last August. You asked that the Planning Commission would review this and accelerate the process on this, which they did. They looked at this in February. They voted on in this in March. It was a unanimous vote by the Planning Commission that there would be under the special exception category. By special exception, that means that they cannot just by right be able to do this. They would have to apply to BZA, get a special exception to be able to do the things that they're asking to be done. What this would allow, if you approve this on first and second reading, would allow meals to be served to non-guests. In other words, it could be opened up as a restaurant from 10 a.m. It says 11:30 in the memo. It's really 11 p.m. So from 10 a.m. to 11 p.m., meals could be served, lunches and dinners. They could also have 2 outdoor events per month, and that would end no later than 10 p.m. With this, they have to provide so much parking, and there's other requirements as far as allowing this to go to BZA. It really provides a very finite area that could, in fact, apply for this. 4 acres in size. It has to be on the National Historic Register. So right there alone, what are the bed and breakfasts? There aren't too many right now, except one that I could think of in Aiken. It doesn't mean there couldn't be in the future. But the things that Rose Hill had wanted, I believe, is in here. I believe they did want to have a little point of clarity that although amplified music for a special outdoor concert would only be allowed twice a month, that they would be able to have the associated music that would accompany a typical restaurant. You know, usually you have some music going on at that time, but that would still be allowed, especially if they had some outdoor seating. So before tonight is the modifications to the bed and breakfast facility that allows the changes to be made at Rose Hill that they had requested, which is primarily the restaurant, the outdoor events, and if council approves this on first reading, then a second reading and public hearing would be held.
Okay, thank you, sir. Does anyone want to speak on this? Okay, back to council. Do we have
a hand in the back?
I'm sorry. Okay.
Jan, you need to come up to the mic here and speak.
Council needs to move this to stay.
We do that for all first readings.
Oh, I apologize. Yeah. I asked about that.
Yeah.
Jan Smith, 183 Dogwood Road. I didn't come here to speak particularly about this. It just happened to be on the agenda. So I don't have the benefit of having Exhibit A, so I'd like to know where these 50 parking spaces are going to be and what on the historic property is going to be altered to accommodate that. And I believe there are restrictions now in the new noise ordinance on outdoor events. So I just would like hope that this property is not going to be dramatically altered. But we don't have Exhibit A out there, so where's the parking going to be for 50 cars?
There's parking that's on site currently for cars, and then there's also cars parked along the streets that border this property.
No, but it said there's going to be 50 cars inside.
Correct.
No, where? I don't think there's space now.
There's current parking inside Rose Hill currently.
For 50 cars?
That's correct.
There's still a parking area being created from a abandoned corner.
Steve, would you come up, please?
I just didn't want anything to be really dramatically.
Here's the man that can answer that, Jan, the question.
That's right.
You're right.
Stephen Mueller, my mother Eva Mueller's here tonight, 221 Greenville Street. There's the north east corner of the property had been abandoned, I think, forever, you know, for a good part of a century. And it's just sitting down there not being used, and that's what I intend to create additional parking.
You're going to have buffer or green space?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I have the opportunity, Roger had mentioned about, we got to this process where we are tonight after a number of months of going back and forth and discussions and things. And on the point on the amplification, some of these things get a little blurry, but we all want it for the sake of clarity, make sure we're all on the same page for the long run. If it would be permissible, I'd like to pass out a sheet of paper to you that Ed Evans has in his hand.
Sure. Do you have enough?
Oh.
Yeah. Okay.
Otherwise, I'll give up my copy.
Oh.
She doesn't have one. Just give her one.
Sure.
Absolutely.
The idea on here in the first paragraph, you can read it yourself, that we had had language that was presented at the work session for the Planning Commission, which they had accepted unanimously. And then through some miscommunication between Ed Evans and myself with email, the wording had sort of changed and had been presented to Planning Commission at their regular agenda, which they also unanimously approved. And so I wanted to make it clear what we wanted to do and what we did not want to do, and as concise of words as possible. The idea about the concerts, and I was in the office with Tommy Paradise and Ed Evans today speaking about this. And the idea would be if there was a publicized concert that you paid admission to, that there would be no more than two of those per month, and those would end by 10 p.m. And then if there's, we called it the dining experience, when you're having dinner, anything that normally would accompany that would be permitted. When we have rental events and people pay money to rent the space and have an event, we personally don't wish to have outdoor amplification, even if it was permitted. So we would like to say that that is not permitted. We'd like that amplification to be indoors. So what I'm asking for is what goes along normally with what you would think would be dinner if we do something outside. Is that clear or not?
Mm. Steve, you've had weddings from the chapel. You don't think that
people would want the wedding music from your chapel to the outdoor?
No, that, you know, something like that is temporary.
Okay.
What I'm concerned about is if people come in and I don't really know what to expect, and they have different sized bands, and this goes on.
Okay. For a period.
And just like the Rye Patch, the people next to them don't enjoy listening to the music over and over and over, and I wouldn't want to be in the same position.
Okay.
So I'll keep it indoors. We did have a... yes, sir.
Steve, the first item, isn't that already in here, what I'm reading? Maybe it's not in the... I'm reading Roger's letter to us. Talks about a maximum of 2 outdoor events per month.
Mr. Mayor, I think what he's saying is that language is limiting him, what he's planning on doing is a little bit extra compared to what's in the ordinance now, but he doesn't think it goes outside the intent of what the Planning Commission was trying to do when they modified the ordinance.
Okay, but doesn't it already include item 1, though?
It does include item 1.
It does.
Okay.
But it does not include item 2
right,
or okay. 3.
Okay.
But item 1 at that time said 10 o'clock.
And what's he proposing?
You said 10.
Right. Yes, ma'am.
It's 10.
Right.
So that hadn't changed. I mean, that's part of it.
Item 7. Isn't that what we're talking about? Rephasing?
Yeah, right. Item 7.
With 1, 2, and 3.
Steve, excuse me, is that what you're saying? You would like to see these 3 items.
Is it 7 being replaced with 1, 2, 3?
This was the confusion.
I'm confused by the way it's written, I guess, or maybe the way I'm thinking it.
No, but
I'm
you seeing see, it. Because 1 doesn't limit it now, but it does specifically for 2.
You'd like to have this replaced by this.
Okay. That's correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Apply the maximum of 2.
He would like to have item 7 replaced by what's in front of you tonight.
Okay.
So we could go ahead and modify, if council is agreeable, to take item number 7 that's being modified in 3.3.4C and replace that with what you have before you, those 3.
But my point was, I understood actually that says an outdoor amplified music is allowed 2 times per month for paid admission concerts without a time limit.
Roger, forgive me for interrupting, but what I meant to ask you is that if you had general support for this, if you would allow Mr. Evans to work on the language and present it to you next time so you didn't have to worry about the words right now. But that's what he said he would be agreeable to.
Well, this
sounds good to me.
It's first reading, so it will go to second reading.
Did you really intend to go beyond 10 o'clock?
No.
Well, then all you got to do is add the 10 p.m. to the 1 as well.
You're probably all you're going to do is add item number 2 and item number 3 on his sheet to item number 7.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But Mr. Evans just got this in his hands today.
Right.
And we'll have this ready for second reading. Any modifications that would be necessary?
Okay.
But this is the intent that Steve has.
For mine, 10 o'clock.
Work on it.
So if you pass on first reading the way it is today, then we'll have a modified section for the second reading.
No.
Okay.
And other issues that we had also dealt with, I'd been encouraged to look long-term down the road. So when I was thinking of the idea, because we have so many requests for souvenir items and types of things like this, was to naturally have a type of gift shop. But in discussions with people, this is also another area that had become problematic. So now when the language says something like I can have a postcard or something, now I just didn't have the energy to pursue this anymore. But I would prefer it down the road, maybe years down the road, to have just a regular gift shop, you know. So I'll leave that up to you. If you would give Mr. Evans the permission to provide you some other wording, or just stay with what he has now.
Okay.
But it's just not that killer of an issue for
him. Item number 8 allows that, though.
It does.
Steve.
Yeah.
You asked for that, so item 8 says, I think you were asking.
To guess.
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay. So I think we have to cover
paper. Right.
Okay. And in 7, really, the language is fine, except
the 10 o'clock, so we'll make those changes.
Okay.
Again, if you pass this on first reading, we'll modify this to reflect, I think, everything
and
that...
One last point I wanted to reassure people that I have gone out and spoken with neighbors on all sides, and that I'm prepared for either the next meeting or BZA to bring them personally or with their signed support. So I've made sure that people are aware all around.
Once, if council passes on second reading at the next meeting, they will still need to have a public hearing before BZA to allow this to take place. So all you're doing is, by saying this, you have made changes to the ordinance, and then they need to go before BZA to get approval to do this because they're asking for a special exception.
And originally, when we had spoken, we thought, as an idea of containing this in general, to say that it could only apply in commercial zones and not in residential zones. But this issue, after discussion, became problematic also. So we've ended up leaving it as it was.
Okay, very good.
Mr. Mayor, I just want to add that I know a number of the neighbors that is adjacent to this property and in the neighborhood, and I know that Steve and Eva have spent considerable time building relationships mm-hmm. and being good neighbors to the community, and I don't perceive that they will see this as a problem with what we're proposing with this this ordinance change. So with that, I move that we adopt this on first reading for the bed and breakfast facility to amend the zoning ordinance.
Okay. All right.
I'll second it, Mr. Mayor.
Give me a second. Let me just add to what you say. I had the occasion to go over there, and Steve gave me a tour of what they've done, the renovations to Rose Hill in the back portion, and it's beautiful. What you
trying to
done,
say, and I've tried to make
gorgeous.
It available for anybody who would like to come out
right.
and be familiar with what's going on as it's changing.
It's exceptional, yeah. What's being done in the back there, and it's beautiful. Y'all doing a wonderful job. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Any more? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Pass this unanimously. Item 4 is the first reading of an ordinance to rezone portion of the property at 1129 South Boundary Avenue Southeast from RS 15 to Horse District HD. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to rezone certain property owned by Ann Pisano and located at 1129 South Boundary Avenue from residential single family RS 15 to the Horse District. They would like to combine these properties, but they cannot do so because each property has got a different zoning. So you only can combine them if they have the common zoning. So they're before you tonight. The Planning Commission unanimously approved this, and so for your consideration, this is first reading of an ordinance to rezone the rear property portion consisting of 0.159 acres at 1129 South Foundry Avenue from RS 15 to HD.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second?
So moved.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Any discussion? Looks like a very reasonable request to me. Okay, all in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay, thank you. Item 5 is first reading of an ordinance to rezone property at 303 Charleston Street Southeast from General Business, GB, to RS8 Residential. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to rezone a lot consisting of 0.36 acres of land owned by Legacy Design, LLC, from General Business, GB, to Residential Single Family, RS8. This was formerly occupied by a dilapidated commercial quick shop at that corner. They have since removed it. They are currently building on some of the other lots that they already had rezoned. This is exactly what council had asked would happen to this neighborhood under the Old Aiken Master Plan. The Planning Commission unanimously approved this to have the property at Colleton and Charleston rezoned from general business to RS8. And so for your consideration tonight, this is the first reading of an ordinance to rezone the property at 303 Charleston Street Southeast from general business to RS8.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor, that we rezone the property from general business to RS8.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
We have a second as well. Okay, any discussion?
How big is this property? I know it's 0.36 acres, but is that 8,000 square feet? I don't know. An acre is how many thousand?
It's over 12,000 square feet.
Okay.
42,560. Craig, would you like to add anything to this issue? Anybody have any questions of Mr. Jarvis?
They're already under construction if you go by the site that
there's already. Yeah, and it's just one lot. That's it, right?
Craig Jarvis. We own four of those lots, and our intent is to build four homes, and this was the biggest lot of all. It's 100 by 180, so if I press the button, it's 18,000 square feet, which is more than enough. We've already taken it down and smoothed out. I think
it looks great.
Very much improved the neighborhood.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
And if you recall, just last week we rezoned property one block away from here to the north as RS6.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor? Show hands, please. Passes unanimously. Okay. Item 6, first reading of an ordinance to annex and approve the concept plan for property at Powder House Road and Old Powder House Road. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the City of Aiken, certain property consisting of 57.83 acres of land, more or less, owned by Mary Taylor McLean Unified Credit Trust and Brandenburg Properties, and to zone the same plan residential PR. Last year, in August, you approved the utilities to this piece of property. If I recall, they were proposing a couple of hundred units that were going to be attached. Some of them were going to be having alleys behind it, and it was going to be an upscale type of community. This property was not contiguous to the city, but they did acquire some acreage just to the north of this area, which allows it now to become contiguous. Therefore, for that reason, instead of just going ahead with the one smaller portion that you already given approval, they're asking for annexation of the entire piece, which would give them a maximum of 225 single-family detached homes, or a density of 3.8 units per acre versus 8 units, which they could have in a PR zone. This is going to be a what I call limited access type of community. It'd be similar to Kilmia Landing in that there would be a gate, but not one that's occupied or manned to get in. Because there were less than 3,000 trips per day that would be generated from this development, it was not required to have a traffic study done for this piece of property. There are several conditions that the Planning Commission put on this. Number one was the annexation to be contingent on the sale of the property to the applicant. That number two, that the frontage along Old Powder House Road be planted with a dense evergreen buffer complying with the buffer provisions of the zoning ordinance. If you've been by the site, it's currently a cotton field. That the following waivers be granted: to allow one section of the road near the northwest corner of the project to be 16 feet back-to-back with a right-of-way of 32 feet. To allow the entrance median on Powder House Road to be 170 feet in length, and that no median be required at the secondary entrance at Old Powder House Road. So there's two entrances. One would have a median, one would not have it on Old Powder House. That the project is not required to show a future right-of-way connection to the east, since this is a gated community. Four, that the building separation required by the PR zone be provided unless a variance is granted by BZA. They do realize if they want to bring these units a little bit closer together, that BZA would have to approve that. And a lot of that is based on the recommendation of our public safety department upon their review of what's going to be built there and the type of materials. Five, that the project be landscaped as described in the narrative, and that a landscape plan be approved by the planning director, including tree selection from the city's approved tree list. Six, that the development comply with the latest approved concept plan and narrative on file with the city planning department. Seven, that elevations of the proposed building, including depiction of building materials and colors to be used, should be submitted to council for approval.
8, that a landscaping plan for the perimeter commons area be submitted. Now, item number 9 was not approved by the Planning Commission, but this came from the engineer, and I'm not too sure how the developer feels about it, but typically these items here, especially A and B, would be just part of the engineering submittal that would be reviewed and determined with the engineer. So, again, council could approve this. And item number C, there was no traffic study. So you're really going outside of the traffic management ordinance. So if you want to go ahead and require this, it's again, it's something council would always ask for more, but it's not required by the traffic study. And it's our understanding that the South Carolina Department of Transportation is planning on putting a third lane in there anyways in that area. But again, we don't know. They say they're going to do it. We don't know if it's going to happen a year from now or 5 years from now. That number 10, that all applicable conditions be met within 180 days of approval by council, and 11, that any conditions of annexation be recorded. The Planning Commission did review this, and they voted unanimously to approve it with those conditions except for number 9. For City Council consideration, this is first reading of an ordinance to annex 57.83 acres as PR at the intersection of Potterhouse and Old Potterhouse Road, and to approve the submitted concept plan for these single-family detached homes.
A question. Stacking lanes. That is a recommendation by whom?
I assume it's coming from the city engineer, because that was not part of the Planning Commission's recommendation or the planning department's.
Okay. How about the median where there was no median? I noticed that on your letter.
Well, the median, they would be putting an entrance with a median on Potterhouse Road. That would be their major entrance.
Right.
The secondary entrance off of Old Potterhouse Road, there would be a secondary entrance, but there would not be a median at that location. They said that they would provide more landscaping at that particular area instead, along either side of the entrance area.
Okay.
I would be inconsistent with my long-held belief in traffic studies if I didn't mention that I opposed this last time when we gave them utilities because we didn't require a traffic study, yet that's on this very narrow, more heavily traveled, and we're planning on a connector road going over to Powderhouse as well, and it's still very close to Pine Log Road, which in fact, as it is already, as we know from our traffic figures, at a serious level. So for us to not look at the traffic on Pine Log when we talk about putting 2,250 more trips out in that immediate area is beyond it. It shows the weakness of the traffic ordinance, which we really have to extend the area of study out more than a quarter of a mile.
Dick, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. This is a lot more traffic that's going in that area. And we can ask for a traffic study.
Well,
can we not? This is an
we
annexation.
Could, even if it isn't basically required
well,
by the
yeah,
ordinance.
This is an annexation. I just think it'd be wise to do that. I mean, I visualize that corner as well as everybody does, I guess. And that's a lot of houses. Granted, there could be even more, but it's a lot of traffic, too. Roger, you said something about... You heard that DOT was going to put in another lane?
That's what Mr. Evans told me. Ed, can you comment on that? Because I had not heard that until you mentioned it.
The local DOT maintenance engineer said that there would be a stacked lane put in at some point.
Stacking lane is another name for a turn lane.
Yeah. Going from where to where? From East Pine Log Road in... down Powderhouse there to the main entrance maybe, or
the turn lane is not on any arch plan or anything else, so if it's going to be done, it would have to be done with local money. But again, I had also heard several years ago that they were going to put a shoulder on Doherty Road, and I still have not seen that happen. So I'm just saying that it may be done. It may be done 6 months from now, but we don't have any time schedule or anything.
We could require it even as we speak, right?
That's up to City Council, yes.
Okay, that land now is in the county, obviously.
For a similar size development on Banks Mill Road, which is Fox Run, we required a turn lane go into the development. Now, Banks Mill Road had more traffic volume, and therefore a traffic study was done, which stated a turn lane should be put in. Right now, it's just the city engineer's recommendation, but no traffic study was done to determine whether that was needed or not.
I have a question. Is the open state space requirement for planned residential is 20%. Is that correct?
Correct.
Well, is the retention pond considered open space?
No. Is it, Ed?
The whole tract is how many acres in? The whole tract is...
Detention pond, is that part of the 20%? I thought the detention pond could not be part of the 20%.
That's correct.
It's not. Well, where is all the open space then? I see 0.51 acres... 1.41 acres.
You got it as a boundary around the development.
It's 5 acres around the boundary.
Oh, okay. That's going to be open space.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then the buffer is behind that?
I believe what we're looking at is you could see there's a retention pond on the center north side of the development, but around the detention pond is some more open space that not associated with the detention pond. The big open space is the area all the way around the development, which will have some landscaping, and again provide just more of a buffer too between that and the surrounding properties.
So an open space can be the buffer?
It shouldn't be any reason. We've allowed that in the past, yes.
A berm.
Well, a buffer off the right of way.
It says landscape. Okay, I'm just reading what it says on this picture here.
But it looks like the 11 acres that they have allocated for open space, when I add all of these up, it looks like those 3 acres, 3-point-something acres, might be in there if this open space around the boundary is only 5, if I'm looking at that correctly.
Yeah, I think you're right.
5 plus 1.4.
Mr. Mayor.
It would be a quarter of a mile from the entrance up here. I don't know what that is.
Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I beg your pardon. Yes. Yeah. Come on, speak. I wasn't sleeping. I was just studying the words here and trying to understand some things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My name is Todd Bailey. I'm one of the partners. The amenity pond, the retention pond, is actually, we're not going to have it drained. We're actually going to have a well and maintain a level in that, so that will be considered amenity. So that is part, that will be included as part of the open space requirement, because it will be a pond with a certain level of water in it at all times.
So it's not a detention pond, it's a retention pond.
Yeah, we'll store water. My name's Paul Peterson. I was here at the last, and Todd and I are partners. The pond will actually store water, and then it will have a capacity to store water above that level to ensure that for our storm water.
It's similar to the ponds we have at Rye Patch and Holcomb's.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, even Bird, Woodside, I guess, has the
yes.
same.
Yeah.
Same idea.
And one of the things that's happened since the last time, we have gone in, and y'all do not have the benefit of a color but we have reduced the density quite a bit. I know that was one of the big concerns, but as you can see, we brought in some open space in behind some of these houses, which will give them some separation and some green space. And then, of course, we've added some areas here and some landscape islands and some of those type things. In addition, the approval we had before was for 200 units on about a 42-acre tract. We currently have increased by, I think, 15 acres and only have gone up 25 units, so we've reduced our density quite a bit. I know that was a concern in the previous from the previous time. Mr. Smith, I know the reason we've not done a traffic study is that we're working within the Aiken ordinance.
No, I understand.
And I know your heartburn on that, but you know we're trying to play within the rules, so we didn't do the traffic study. And I know 2,200 trips sounds like a lot. Typically, versus 10 trips a day, a lot of municipalities will use 8 trips a day. So, you know, there is some confusion there, but I do want to just hit those couple things. We did bring some kind of renderings to show the homes and so forth.
Good. Could you?
And this might help you too if we pass this one with the shaded area in.
That's a landscape buffer plan that shows the roadway along Powder House Road, which will be, when you're talking about a berm, it's not a swale, it's actually going to be a planted vegetative berm between 4 and 6 feet tall to add a break so that the houses backing up the old Powder House Road will have protection so they won't be right along the road.
Did you say 4 to 6 feet?
Correct. So it'll be about that high, about 15 feet wide.
That's probably larger than what we have at Citizens Park, isn't it?
It is. I guess a similar type of development you could mirror this to would be Kelmia Landing, individual detached homes, all brick. They got berms out in front there with a gated area that's self-monitored.
That's correct. And it's going to be, when the landscape plan is being passed around, it's just showing some exterior landscaping from the interior that the builder will put street trees along each road, so you'll have different trees which will meet the city tree requirements as far as what species of tree that y'all are looking for. Because currently there are no trees on a piece of property.
Now, are you all building these houses?
Yes, ma'am.
You're not just selling lots off to somebody to build?
No, ma'am.
That's not the plan. As economics change, we don't want to be 100% locked in, but economically today, we're planning to do the build.
Our goal is we figure about 30 houses a year, so it'll take about 7 years to build this out.
We've reduced our numbers from the previous. We've raised the price and reduced the number of units. So before we were trying to get around a $200,000 townhouse market. Now the price points will ease up above 200 for the detached homes. So the number of units where we had talked about before being approximately 40 to 50 a year, probably down into the 30 to 40 is what our goals are at this point in time.
Sort of median, what's the price range?
You know, 200 and above, probably 215 to 250, something like that.
Single family?
Yep. Yes. Lot widths are anywhere from 55 to 60 feet.
How many square feet in each? Square footage.
Well, frontage was 55 to 60.
The unit, how big?
The unit size would be 14 to 2,000 square feet.
14 to 2,000.
Yeah, probably to 2,000.
Probably 2,000?
No, or, from 14 square, okay. 1,400 square feet to about 2,000 square feet.
All right.
And that's heated space.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they have two double car garage.
Every unit will have a double car garage. And we're working with Chief Fromer as far as with the BZA request, which currently is 15 feet on a single level home and 20 because the materials we're using, which would be all brick, to like the 9 foot. The only thing that would be vinyl would be the overhang, the eave. No vinyl siding. Anything that would be in a gables would be hardy board or stucco. So from a safety standpoint, he was on board with that.
I don't understand that. I just need to ask. You mean you're going to have that dotted stuff on the eaves, the soffit? That vinyl stuff that looks
just
like
on the eave, which is pretty
standard. It just screams vinyl siding when you put that on. I mean, don't you think?
No, ma'am.
I mean, that's the worst thing about vinyl siding to me. I'd rather put the rest of it vinyl and have that dotted stuff not there.
This community is geared towards active adults, and one of the things we want is a maintenance-free community. And if we start putting wood soffit and fish on, that's the biggest maintenance that you're going to have. So that's the only piece of vinyl will be a 1 foot strip around the house on the soffit.
Have we in the past included retention ponds as open space?
Retention, yes, not detention.
Where?
Ed, can you?
Jane, I see the concept, and I'm going to say it really looks nice, because what they're doing is like Woodside, creating a little pond, a little lake with green around it, which, since it's all bare anyway.
You're not going to fence it then, or like detention ponds. Thank you.
No, chain link fence would be coming on. No, the idea is for when people come to the rec center and the homes that would border that,
it's
to be able
view.
To look out and look at it and think that they're on waterfront property. Because we would maintain a level.
Because he has a calculator.
No, not that. The one that showed this in color.
Right here.
They didn't come by?
No.
I didn't see that either.
You step back and back.
Oh, okay. I thought you were doing it, and then.
Oh, you didn't. It's the same as the paper that we.
Oh, it's the same.
No, we're holding that one back from you. We didn't overwhelm you with all the colors.
This is it.
Oh, well.
That's a good sized pond.
Again, this pond would be commonly owned by the association, along with the clubhouse, along with the swimming pool that would be there, and it becomes an amenity package by the fact that it has water in there all the time. And again, think of Hopeland's Garden, where you have about 3 feet of water, but it'll get up to 6 to 7 feet at times during a storm event.
Exactly.
So it's a controlled pond.
That you're exactly what we're thinking about.
Okay. Any other discussion? Any other questions? We need a motion and a second. I don't think we have that yet.
Can I ask one more question?
Certainly.
Where do we stand on the stacking? Is that, if it's a requirement by DOT, that's what we're doing? Or how? I didn't quite understand. Or is that required?
If it's approved the way it's written right now, unless council changes it, it says that there would be the turn lane or stacking lanes, the left turn lane, would be necessary. So again, it's up to city council. It's not required under the traffic ordinance. It's just a recommendation by the city engineer. If you don't think it's necessary, then you could just remove that.
But in fact,
this says in accordance with the DOT requirements, right?
Correct. So in other words, if
the DOT requires it, then we have to do it. Basically, plan submittal would take care of A, B, and C once it's submitted to the city for review.
The way I read it is that the stacking lane would be in accordance with the requirements. So if they say that you need to have a 60 feet of stacking area and then a transition between your 12-foot lane for turning back to your two-lane section of roadway, whatever the requirements are for their stacking lanes, you'd have to build by their standards, not whether or not SCDOT requires it or not, but you would build it according to their standards. That's the way I read it.
I read it that it's whatever their requirement was we would do, but you're saying it's required regardless.
Yes.
And as it's stated.
As it's stated.
As it's stated right now.
This is the A-cell, B-cell lane we're talking about.
Well, the left-hand turn
lane. It's a left-hand turn lane. So if you're going down Powder House Road, we know that the majority of the traffic, at least currently, could be coming from the Pine Log Road area, that there would be a provided stacking lane in that area. Now, think of this development 5 years from now or 10 years from now. The majority of the traffic is not going to be coming from Pine Log Road, because you'll have a connector
between Powderhouse Road and the mall area that'll be within a few blocks of this particular location. In fact, this particular location could be the point where the intersection of that connector would be at. It'd be very close to it. So the majority of the traffic is not going to be coming from the north. It's probably going to come from the south because it's because of where the attraction is at.
I'd like for you to keep in mind too that we're planning on a 30 unit build out per year. So it's going to be 3+ years before we have 100 people living in the neighborhood. As far as a requirement for that,
right. And it may well take that long. It might take longer.
That's true.
Again, who's going to fund it?
Well, we'd love for the DOT to.
When they approve the road.
Well, as it's stated in here, I'm assuming you would fund it if it's part.
And we're asking not to fund that. I guess if they require it, we would more than welcome to do it. But we'd like it to be go through the entire engineering process before it was mandated, I guess, is what we're asking for tonight.
If the DOT says it has to be there, then, yeah, we'll put it in. But yeah. If they say it doesn't.
Just so council and the developers understand, we just had another one where we received a check. They submitted plans. We approved the plans for one on Banks Mill Road going to that Fox Run. It costs approximately, with the right-of-way that would be required, around $180,000 for a properly designed left turn lane into a development similar to this. Mr. Smith brought up the fact that you will probably be getting at the next council meeting what we call a transportation enhancement fee. If you recall, Woodside has to go ahead and pay a certain amount of money for some improvements. And our suggestion, and I'm waiting to hear back from Mr. Cunning on this, and it's probably, he's figuring I've already approved it, but we were looking at them paying $200 per lot to pay for those improvements. So another way of doing this would be going ahead. If you felt like this is something you wanted, something you would want to require, and since the build-out period is going to be a certain period of time, instead of them saying, before you can start construction, you need to put in a left-hand turn lane, for us to get a developer's agreement, and let's just say it was $200,000 and there's 200 lots, then they would be paying $1,000 per lot, that what it comes out to be? Cost. No, that's not right, is it?
It's more than.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, in other words, instead of them paying it all up front, as they sell these lots, then they would go ahead and pay for it over a period of time. And that's what we're doing with Woodside. We'd have to look, though, at a developer's agreement if you wanted that done. This is just another alternative. Instead of, if this is going to be required, instead of you write out a check and saying, okay, this is pay for this up front, you pay for it over a period of time.
So when would it be installed and who would pay for the initial installation of the left-hand turn lane? It would
be installed when we saw sufficient amount of traffic going into this particular development. So in other words, instead of installing it immediately, like you said, you're building 30 to 40 lots a year, you'd be, and let's just say it's $1,000 a lot. So every year you'd be paying us $30,000 to $40,000 a year until we felt we had sufficient amount of money or we needed to go ahead and put it in because there's just that amount of traffic.
Now, Mr. Evans, I believe, said earlier that the DOT has already approved a left-hand turn lane?
They have notified Mr. Evans that it's in their future planning.
If they were going to go ahead and implement that, then would we be able to remove that impact fee?
Again, that would be up to City Council as to how the developer's agreement is written. There's a risk in all of this, a risk on the part of City Council, risk on the part of you. The good way of doing it this way would be that you could bear that cost over a period of time.
Sure.
And the risk the city takes is that the cost will go up and it's going to cost a lot more than that. Now, if all of a sudden our advantage is if SCDOT builds it, then we have the money in a transportation fund and we can use it for another project like this connector that's going to happen between Powder House and Whiskey Road. So the money that we got for this other development is in what we call a transportation fund right now.
Okay. It's not directed towards a particular.
But if and when we need it for that project, we have the money available.
Okay.
Now, if on Banksville Road, the highway department widens it, fine, then we have this money now available to use for other highway projects.
Does the fund, do we stop paying at that point? In other words, if DOT came in next year and said, we're going to put this lane in, and we've been through a year, we paid $30,000, do we still owe $170,000, or do we stop at that point?
Again, it all depends on what we put in the developer's agreement and what you could work out with City Council on that.
Where do you get, but if you're going to add another lane, there's got to be property, right?
Well, in this case, part of the property, or the, I don't know what the right-of-way is of the road right now. You know, there may be sufficient road right-of-way to do that, or you may have to acquire some right-of-way to do that.
Well, we need to know that, don't we? Because that's going to affect the cost dramatically.
Right. The one on Banksville Road, Larry, what do they need, about 7 or 8 feet of property, I believe?
Approximately.
Yeah, so, again, you may need some property, you may not need some property here.
But we need to know.
Well, that's, again, it all depends if how you want to approach this particular item here in the left turn lane. We prefer the transportation enhancement fee because I think it's an advantage to the developer and it's an advantage to the city. It just works out where that cost, I know you're going ahead to build all this yourself, you're saying, but then you just add that to the cost of the home, which you would do anyways, but it's not all up front.
No, I appreciate the working it out. I mean, ideally, it'd be great if
you didn't have to do it at all.
Yeah,
but I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, you know, there is some things here that we would like some consideration for, is that, you know, these will be private streets that we're going to pave and keep up and maintain. Mm-hmm. And the city will not have to do that, and they'll be paying a full tax burden from these houses. So there, you know, there is some advantage to the city, and the city engineering is that, you know, you have 3 miles of roads, and, you know, that the so that the people living there will be paying an association fee in addition to their property taxes to build a fund to overlay their road and some of those type things. Which I would very much appreciate some consideration of that too, because long term they will have to bear their own repaving expenses and some of those type things.
Yeah, look, for instance, Kilmia Landing has repaved their roads and the city did not have to pay anything. The only thing we did for Kilmia Landing is we helped them with the engineering contract and we piggybacked it onto one of our existing contracts. And we've done the same thing for Woodside. But they're paying for the actual money to repave their roads.
Woodside is paying.
Roger, it seems like there are a lot of questions here. Do we need a developer's agreement to iron out some of these things and make sure everybody understands?
The only thing that I see that we would maybe need in a developer's agreement would be this transportation fee to pay for this left turn lane if council wants that. And if that's what council wants, then we would need to put together a developer's agreement.
Well, I think when we started that with Woodside, we kind of looked at it as if this was the first, we need to do something like that. So we started with Woodside. And so we've got the example. So why doesn't it apply to this?
Because this left turn lane was not required based on a traffic study.
They haven't done a traffic study.
Maybe we need a traffic study.
Well, also, we had approval a few months ago from y'all on the 42-acre track without a left-hand turn lane.
Not from all of us.
And we don't want to go back to that concept plan either. I didn't want to throw that one on the table, but we don't want to go back to that one. We like this concept, and
right.
We want to do it, but, you know, we've got to make it affordable to us,
sure.
too.
And to the people buying homes.
And the people buying homes. And that's the main thing. If we can't make it affordable for them, nobody wins.
But I tell you, I really think that third lane would be so attractive to someone that was going to live in that development. I really do. I mean, that road is treacherous.
Let me make
right
this
now.
And realize that they also have an entrance on Old Powder House Road. They will have an additional entrance there too.
Roger, wanted to make.
Well, let me make this suggestion. We will put together a developer's agreement with these two gentlemen. Before the next meeting. If for some reason we can't, then of course it won't go on for second reading until we can. I don't really believe a traffic study is needed. In other words, for them to pay $15,000-$20,000 for a traffic study at this point in time, based on the level of service that is on that particular roadway and the number of units that are going to be built, we would have in the developer's agreement that a traffic study is not needed. However, we feel that they should pay for a turn lane at that location based on the pro rata share, in this case, of the cost of the improvement in relationship to the number of units. In this case, I think it was 225 units. And whatever that turns out to be, it may be $800, maybe $900 a unit. And they would pay this on a quarterly basis as their homes got permits for this development. Up until the point, until either A, enough funds are there to go ahead and build it, or they keep paying it until someone else built it. So therefore, because I think the whole intent is we want to build. So if the South Carolina Highway Department does follow through 2 years from now, or 3 years, or whatever the time frame is, and we really know they're going to put this third lane in, then their payment would cease. Now, we'd still keep the money and use it for other things, but if you're billed out 7 years and the highway department comes in year three and says, okay, we're going to build it, then you wouldn't continue paying that fee at that point. And if council is agreeable to that, we will go ahead and put that together in writing for you to review as part of the second reading.
And I think we can just pass this on first reading with the understanding that that would be done. I agree that the traffic study isn't going to enlighten us anymore at this point. We know that we have the problem out there, but I think we're meeting one of the problems we'd find out from this study is that we're going to need that.
So Dick, I'm sorry.
Dick Smith being
what are you saying?
How about this, Mr. Mayor? I move that we approve this on first reading, subject to the changes Roger mentioned.
Okay, I understand that. Good.
Thanks. Second, Mr. Mayor, and that includes the developer's agreement.
Right. Okay. Right. Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Okay. Passes unanimously. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
We'll be in touch with you in the next couple of days concerning that.
Okay. Item 7 is the first reading of an ordinance to close an unopened right-of-way in exchange for a new road right-of-way. Mr. Ledoux.
Yes, sir. This hopefully won't be too difficult. The ordinance reads, an ordinance authorizing the City of Aiken to close an unopened portion of right-of-way of South Centennial Avenue. For those council members that were on council at the time, when that entire area was developed, where the office park is at, the city helped fund the roadway going into that development and going in and through Churchill Commons. Part of that agreement was the developer or the owner of the land gave us a 60-foot right-of-way going to the back side of Bonneview. Bonneview wasn't ecstatic about the fact that we were proposing putting a road that would have gone onto, I think it was Shannon Lane at that time. But we knew that wasn't going to be done anytime soon, so we figured we weren't going to worry about that. But we do have the right-of-way going through this area.
3 years ago, there's a lot of vacant property out there for leasing, and it's all filled up. They need to go ahead and build another piece of property, and part of that property that they want to build would be on top of the 60-foot right-of-way. We also know that we've just approved recently that north-south, east-west connector in that area, and we need right-of-way that is more appropriately aligned with where that roadway is going to go. So what the developer has agreed is he will go ahead and give us a 100-foot right-of-way in exchange for the 60-foot right-of-way that is currently there. You have a drawing showing the new alignment of what they propose to giving us. It's colorized versus what we'd be giving them. This works out great because this is exactly what we are planning for the future and allows them to build this new building. In exchange, we will go ahead and get the right-of-way that we were needing to have in the very near future. So we're happy, I think they're happy, and so for your consideration tonight, this is first reading of an ordinance to close an unopened portion of right-of-way of South Centennial Avenue and accept the new right-of-way as shown on the attached site plan.
Okay.
So the part that's bright yellow.
That's what the city currently owns.
And we will not,
We will exchange that portion for the portion that you see proposed new connector roadway.
And what will go with the yellow street?
That'll just become part of their development. Part of that's part of their parking area. Most of it's just going to be open space.
For the new building?
For this new building that they're planning on putting there.
Now that's got a detention basin open space, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, but you can see in this other, the darker green, it says existing wooded area, open space, trees to remain.
Right.
That'll stay green instead of us cutting a new road in there sometime in the future.
And who will own that?
The developer will own that. Everything that's in yellow, they will own. Everything where it says, where it shows gray plus the dotted lines for the right-of-way, we will own.
So you're swapping right-of-ways?
We're swapping right-of-ways.
And the new building is who's going there?
If you want to ask them who the new building's for, they could tell you.
You want to tell us who the new building is for?
I could tell you, but I think I'd rather have them tell you.
Yeah, that's fine.
My name is Ernest Lombardo. I represent Matrix. We're the developers, and we own Centennial Park. We have a current client who's already in several of our buildings that has asked for more space. That's Westinghouse, and they're looking for a bigger area. We don't have a commitment from them yet, but it looks like it's coming that way. And then we're going to have an additional space for possibly some of our other tenants.
Right. Okay. That's Westinghouse Safety.
Yes.
Safety.
Yeah, they're over at the Savannah.
Right. Yeah, they've really expanded.
Yes. Boy. So they're busting out at the seams there, trying to figure out a way to go, and there's not a lot of area for them to move into. Right. And we had bought that 5.5-acre piece there.
Very good.
So it works out for both of us.
Okay. Anybody have any questions?
And you are going to leave green space then?
Yes, absolutely.
Right. So this is planned commercial. What is this?
This is office. I believe it's all zoned office.
So is there a green space requirement?
You're just doing it. Mr. Evans would have to answer that. What office requires as far as green space?
What green space? Do you need that for office?
In other words, when we pass this, it guarantees that that's going to stay green space.
Sir, can you answer that question? By us approving this, then do we know for sure that this will stay green space back here?
Yes, it will. Right now, that's the plan. We're going to keep that green space. I believe it was 20%.
So that provides that buffer between Bonneview and this development.
So we need to state that, though, in this clearly, right?
That would be very important.
It wouldn't hurt.
We do not have that as part of this.
Pardon me?
We do not have this. So if you would like to make that motion that we approve this, but that the area behind this building would stay open space and the trees would remain.
Trees remain, yeah.
Okay.
But it's the wash and safety management.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, we want to add that. We don't have a motion. We do need a motion and a second.
I so move, Mr. Mayor, that we approve this on first reading.
With the condition that the trees would remain as it?
With the condition that the trees remain as shown on the application.
On this concept plan.
On the concept plan.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I second.
Okay. Okay. Are there any other questions or comments of these gentlemen?
Thank you.
If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously on the first reading. Okay. Item 8. Approval of the Accommodation Tax Committee recommendations.
Yes, sir. We're going to make this very easy this year. Everybody got 100% of what they wanted.
How much is left over?
And we have a little bit left over. Again, the reason we're able to do that, and I'm not going to sit here and say that this is going to happen every time, but Lisa Hall is back there waiting patiently. And one of the reasons we just have had unspent money from previous years. People say they're going to spend so much money, they find out they don't, or they found out not everything was eligible. And so and I'm sure we'll have unspent money again this year. It just happens every year. Well, when we looked at what was unspent and what we were getting in, we're looking at making an award the highest we've ever made, but everybody gets 100%, and everything what we see appears to be eligible. So it's not like everything we're approving here may not be. It just appears like everything's eligible. You'll see it's very interesting. Just about every one of these areas were funded this past year, and you can see how much they received last year versus what they're going to receive this year. Give you the example, number two item, Aiken Pole Festival. They got $27,000 last year. They're going to get $67,000. Now, that's advertising outside the 50-mile radius. So they're going to be advertising in magazines. It could be overseas. It could be other newspapers. It brings to our area not tourists, but visitors.
Roger, on that one, who exactly does that marketing? Is this Aiken Polo Club?
Yes, the organization that puts in the grant, they're responsible for marketing, and they have to adhere to the regulations set by the state, and this is all reimbursement. So they have to put up the money up front and then provide us with the documentation that they did what the state requires, and then they get their money.
But Lisa, that is the Aiken Polo Club?
Well, there's two.
No. Two different polo groups. The Aiken Polo Festival was the Gold Cup last year.
Okay.
And then Aiken Polo Club is about number 7 or 8 down.
Yeah.
And they're getting $27,000 this year.
25.
They received $27,000 last year.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is our recommendation to you from the Accommodation Tax Committee.
It looks like you may have gotten fewer requests this year. Is that?
It's kind of averaging out to be the same, around 16, 17. What's happening is a lot of folks who do go apply and work for really nice tourist events. So I think the people that are applying now and that are getting recommendations from the committee are doing
Thank you, Lisa. Okay, do we have a motion and a second?
Move for approval, Mr. Mayor. Second, Mayor.
Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously.
Next
item is deleted. Item 2 there, request for extension of auditor's contract.
Yes, Mr. Mayor and Council. A couple years ago, we went out for bids. We had used Cherry Beck and Holland for a number of years.
very good firm to work with, but after 5 or more years, we feel it's important that we go out to someone new just to make sure that the current auditor doesn't get too comfortable, and we get too comfortable with them. Elliott Davis has done this work for 2 years. They work out of their local office here in Aiken. It's been a very good relationship with them. This fiscal year that we're currently in will be their third and final year, and we're recommending, based on the performance that they have done, that we continue their contract for 2 additional years, which will be a fourth and fifth year. The amount of increase that they're showing is very modest, going from $31,800 this year to less than $1,000 for the following year, and then another $1,000 for the year thereafter. So our recommendation to you is that we extend their contract for 2 additional years, 2008-2009, as per the letter of agreement that is attached.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Any comments? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Request for funding approval of year 2000 1 cent sales tax.
Yes, we're real excited. We were able to get some additional funding for the items that were approved in 2000 by the voters. At the time that, we had about 30 days to put together all these projects and the approximate amount of funding at that time. And so some of the estimates were off. Some of the estimates, asphalt and gas has gone up 100% plus since that time. Construction materials, the same thing. So the additional money that we're receiving of almost $2.3 million is very important to finish some of these projects. For instance, public safety. We have not started their station. That's the one that will be built on Citadel. We had estimated at the time $400,000. Probably a pretty good estimate at that time. But due to inflation, construction materials, etc., they're going to need $600,000. CP, Citizens Park, a couple of the parking lots are left in dirt right now. We want to finish those. Two of the fields need to be scraped off. We need to have fencing. We need to have dugouts. We need to have ticket booths. And there's just a number of things to complete. So taking all those into account of things that the voters approve that need to be completed, and I've also included the fact that the Performing Arts Theater owes us $74,810. We did have in the budget $750,000 for that project, which we have not used nearly that amount. Paying that debt off so that it's there's no debt whatsoever in the theater. We have some, if you look at all those, we still have a couple of questions just to make sure that this is what you want. There has been some questions over the last 5 years on whether or not we need 4 additional courts and the south end parking lot that goes between Precision Tune and where those courts were at. That tennis center originally had 16 courts designed. We built 12. In talking to Glenn and his staff, we have seen a tremendous increase of use out there since the tennis center was completed. A lot more lessons. They're starting a youth program. Mark Calvert's hired an assistant, and he's using someone during the summer to assist the assistant. Our fees that we've gotten in have doubled just in the last few months, just again since the tennis center. They feel like the 4 extra courts would be very helpful, and especially as we look towards the future.
Are they hard courts?
You know,
it could be clay.
It could be either one. In talking to Mark Calvert, he's getting more demand for the clay courts.
I know, but the maintenance is...
The maintenance is, and I don't even want to say the word because it's not a nice word.
And the high school kids need more courts.
So, I mean, what we could do is, the original design was to go half and half. We can go with these 4 courts and say 2 would be clay and 2 would be hard courts. That would give you 8 of each.
Can we figure out, because when they get those high school tournaments going, there's a problem. Of a short, you know what I'm saying? And I don't know if they're short 2 courts or 4 courts or what they're short. And those have to be hard courts.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, if you approve the additional four courts, I'll get Mark Kelver to give us some recommendations on what those four should be consisting of.
You might want to talk to the coaches at 8
The play courts are certainly a high maintenance item, and they've been unfortunately more problematic than we thought they would be. We're going to have to spend more time maintaining them. But they are very, very, very popular and becoming more so. I didn't think they were that much, and when I went out there last week and looked at all this, I heard an earful from several of the tennis players and folks of how much they like the clay courts.
How many clay courts are there and how many are there?
Right now we have 12 courts, 6 are clay, 6 are hard courts. And I think the additional 2 hard courts would give you that 8 that would help you with the tennis matches, because you have 6 singles and then you have 2 doubles, I believe. So that gives you that 8 that you were talking about. Plus would help for other tournaments. But their recommendation is they really feel the courts are necessary, and they feel that the south end parking lot, which right now everybody parks there anyways, it's awful. It would really beautify and finish off that area. If we do that, that's about another $300,000. And then the other area this may be a little bit wild and crazy, but we had one of the projects was Richland Avenue landscaping. So from Rolling Wood back up to Greg, or if you want to go even further to where we stopped our work, we could just put landscaping along the side, you know, put some trees in there and some shrubs and just do that, and that'd be about $50,000. Or we feel there's enough room where you're not going to interfere with the roads that are currently in there and put landscape median from Rolling Wood up to the top of the hill at Greg. And you could get in, I think it was 3 or 4 landscape medians, Larry?
3
landscape medians. And they're not going to be as extensive as you would see in other areas, because they're only going to be about 16 feet wide, but it would give you a little bit of greenery as you're going down Richland Avenue towards the bottom of the hill.
But when you've got a street lined with houses and driveways coming out onto it, then they're going to have to go around the median.
For those few houses that would be there, they'd have to go around. Similar to what it is right now, if you're from Waterloo on in, you have to go around.
Waterloo?
Into town.
Oh, okay.
You know, you got the medians. You'd have to go around the medians, and the same thing here. You'd have to loop around it. But there's right now probably less than 10 houses that have driveways in those areas. And we'd have to provide the storage lanes for the streets that are in there. And that's why the medians wouldn't be extensive. But, again, if you want some greenery, this is probably the last opportunity. So, like I said, it's a little bit of a wild and crazy idea, but if you wanted to do landscaping on the sides and the medians, it would be about $200,000. We still will have some money left over. As we were just talking about with these gentlemen here with the Powder House, old Powder House, we're trying to establish a fund, a transportation fund. So as these projects come up, whether it be the Powder House Connector, their Pawnee Extension, or any of these other ones, we have some funds that we could pull from to do these road projects. So we said that any additional funds that are left over after we complete all these projects would go into this transportation fund that we already have set up.
Well, what about the curbs and stuff on Lancaster Street and all that stuff?
They were not part of the original. You could only go ahead and use this money on those original projects.
But you said there's money left over that we could use on Powder House Road. That wasn't part of the original project.
It's not of the original projects, but these were projects that were in the second round of funding. I guess my philosophy, and there's no right or wrong if you agree with me or not, because it's just my feeling, is our first obligation is the projects that we had in year 2000 that the voters voted on.
Yes.
Okay. That's illegal.
Okay, there's still going to be some money left over. I felt that we take whatever money is left over and use it for projects that we certainly will see in the second round. The Powder House Connector, the Southern Connector, the Pawnee, possibly that entrance into the mall, some other roadway projects that we know we certainly don't have enough funding on. So
how much? money are we talking about?
Well, when we brought that to council's attention, the 10 projects that we had listed was going to be close to $90 million. I think it was $87 million.
Yeah.
Now, not all those are in the second round of once on sales tax.
And not all of that is city either. I mean, part of that's county.
So we can spend it in the county, but we can't fix up our city streets?
Well, I feel that the number one project that we have to complete is going to be the Pawnee extension going from Doherty Road up to Fabian, and that project's going to probably be about $1.5 million. We have... I thought it was $800 and some dollars. Okay. So we know we don't have enough money for that, so this extra money can be used for that. Now, if council says let's just use it on some of these other roads, like Lancaster or something else, we could certainly do that, but it starts drifting away a little bit from what the voters had approved in 2000 and 2004. The way that the ordinance was written, it was kind of...
These ditches have been there for years.
Yeah, Robert
and people
Bell,
are ruining their time. I mean, good grief.
The way that the ordinance or the resolution was passed by Aiken County, it doesn't say... it says that they could be directed and used for anything. So, theoretically, if council wanted to use this on the third floor of this building, or to fill in those ditches, or to put curbing somewhere, they could.
Our bare utilities?
I just kind of felt like we try to finish the projects that have already been approved. First of all, the first question is, do you want to finish the tennis courts and the south end parking lot?
Roger, could I ask a question? You said the first priority would be to finish those that were approved.
In 2000.
But I thought this was extra money. We finished those projects.
Correct.
This is extra money that we're applying to some that are in the phase right now.
Well, if we could get through the first round of funding, and then we could talk about what's left over. Because I'm not too sure what's going to be left over.
Let me ask you to another way.
Okay.
The first 1 cent sales tax that was approved, X number of projects. Have we finished all those?
No, we have not.
Okay. So now we're into the second phase that's been approved by the voters.
No, I'm still in the first phase.
I know, but that second phase has been approved, right?
Correct.
Now this money that we've got from the county, this $2 million plus, that's from what? The first phase?
That is correct.
Okay. So it's got to be applied to those projects.
The way that the ordinance or resolution was approved by the county is this excess money could be used in really whatever fashion our city wants to use it.
The wording is artful.
But then...
I'm recommending that's not the case.
Is there enough money left in the first phase then to finish all those projects?
Yes. In your 2000.
Without this. And this is extra.
No. Now you're getting me confused. Okay, we have $2.3 million. It's going to take, if minus the tennis courts and minus the landscaping and the medians on Richland Avenue, it's going to take about $1.4, $1.5 million to complete all those projects.
Yeah.
If you want to complete the tennis courts.
That is not necessary.
And I'm saying that I've heard from somebody in the past that maybe we don't want to complete the tennis courts. We're recommending we do complete the tennis courts. We're recommending you do the landscaping on Richland, but you certainly don't have to do the medians. So you have some options under year 2000 as to how much. It was really undefined on Richland Avenue as to what that landscaping and streetscape was going to be. So,
well, two things that I'm personally in support of, Mr. Mayor and Council, is I share what Jane is saying on Lancaster and the need there, but also on Richland Avenue as well. As I look to the west of us, I don't know whether you have been to Augusta lately to see what North Augusta is doing to their entrance area to their community and their exit area. That landscaping in the center of that town looks good. Somebody is really making a wise investment. And I'm hearing it quite a bit from the public who are traveling back and forth. And so completing Richland Avenue would be an advantage to us as folks ingress and egress from our city. But Lancaster as well, that area has had needs for some time. I'm not fully aware of the tennis needs out there, I have to admit, in terms of what is needed to complete that. So if there's money left over.
I bet we could build 4 hard courts for what 2 clay courts would cost. I mean, I'd be curious to know. I don't know that. Mm-hmm. I would be curious to know if we couldn't do that. I think those clay courts.
But is there money in here for maintenance of the?
You can't use this money for maintenance.
So then, in the long run, we build the hard courts, and then we have to.
Well, for instance, the hard courts that were built just a few years ago, we have money in the budget to resurface them this next year. It's going to, I think we got $2,000 per court just to resurface it. So there's even maintenance money in the resurfacing. A new court needs a resurfacing within just a few years because of some settlement and other things. Once we resurface those hard courts this next year, we'll probably be able to go 7 to 10 years before we have to resurface them again. So it's kind of like there's a little bit of a period of time of adjustment, resurface, then you could wait a longer period. The clay courts, there's maintenance on that every day, and then about twice a year do some pretty major maintenance of bringing in more materials, and we're getting problems with algae at times, and again, depending on the conditions. But again, they're the courts that people, they're much more popular with a lot of.
Yeah, but
for juniors, almost all the junior current tournaments, except for the South Carolina Clay Court Tournament, are on hard courts. And if we want to, you know, really encourage our junior program, which I think we should, I think it's a shame we don't have the program we used to have for the juniors. And he sounds like he's trying to,
yes.
And I know that Mark Tedesco is trying to do that as well. I don't know. I just think we really need to think about this to be sure we can.
There is enough money in here. To kind of answer the mayor's question, enough money in here to finish all the projects from year 2000, including the tennis courts, including the parking lot, including the medians on Richland Avenue, everything, 100%, and we'll still have probably $400,000 or $500,000 left over.
And could that be added to finish the big circle roundabout?
It could be added to finish the big circle roundabout. It could be added to do some of this other streetscape work, or I mean, it
switches the price. In other words, we got to still get traffic problems out on the south side that we're trying to solve with this Dory connection to Pine Lawn.
It's really that extra money, that $400,000 or $500,000, is undesignated, and council could use it. I was just suggesting we put it into a transportation fund because we know that seems to be the most immediate need in the future.
Yeah.
Unfunded need.
It seems to me the first priority would be to finish those projects.
Yes.
We had them listed. We said we're going to finish them.
And that's what we're asking for approval. And then the next, so number one, that's one approval. Second approval is what do you want to do with the additional funds that are left over. Now, we don't have to go ahead and do anything right now. We could say, okay, we'll just set that aside and make a decision 6 months from now or a year from now once we know exactly how much money is left over.
What I'd like to do for the record, Roger, for me personally, probably the one that needs this, is for you to list what those projects are that we can use these funds for, and then let's see the excess, and then we'll have something to make reference to later on.
Okay.
Is that too much to ask?
Well, I guess it's, of course, not too much to ask, but those are the ones that are already listed in the 2000 referendum. I mean, I can go ahead and get you the 2000 referendum.
I've got that somewhere.
You know, that's Citizen Park 2, 3, 4, the theater, public safety, the batting cages, I mean, the tennis courts. I mean, there's about a 6-page list.
But this is what you've summarized for us.
Yeah.
Correct.
Right here.
And so.
And what should be left over.
And then even doing all those projects, we'll still have money left over. So that's what I'm asking. So we could get started on some of these projects. We've had a real outcry from the public on our baseball this year.
last year, I think it was softball, the year before it was soccer, and that, you know, they were looking for batting cages and pitching mounds and pitching, and had the fields finished off. And so this money will allow us to finish everything at Citizens Park the way it was proposed in 2000.
And we'd still have roughly
$500,000 left over. I think that's the question, is how do we spend that $500,000?
Roger. Could we go ahead and do the approval on completing the projects in the 2000 one cent sales tax authorization, and then have you prepare for us some of the needs that you heard in here tonight?
Sure.
And let us cherry pick from those which ones we agree that we want to fund after we take a look at what's going on with that.
Sure.
But we could go ahead and approve this, and then you could go ahead and get started on completing these approvals. And then
I just don't want to see us build a median down up Calmia Hill when we can't even fix the ditches.
I agree with you.
It's not part of what we're approving. We're talking about approval.
Well, that's why I put this as a separate item. I wanted to highlight that one.
Okay.
Because
That's not in here.
No.
Yes, it is. Well, that's a decision that I would like to hear from council tonight. Is, I think it's real obvious Citizens Park, we're going to finish all that.
Yes.
It's real obvious to go ahead and pay off the debt with the theater. It's obvious with the public safety station. We want to do four courts. I'm going to come back with you on a recommendation. Should be two and two, four of this or four of that, and I'll come back with a recommendation on that. But even so, we could get started on the design of where those courts are going to be, the fencing and everything else that's involved, the parking lot that's going to go out there. Tonight, if you could settle the answer on Richland Avenue's median, that would be very helpful. And then I'll bring back to you a listing of projects of whatever the money's going to be left over.
Well, the Richland median, was that in the list of projects?
All it said was Richland Avenue streetscape.
Okay.
It did not describe
trees up on the side of the road.
And that's why I gave you two options here. We could go ahead and just do streetscape along the sides, or we could go ahead and put a median down. You know, there's
I vote for the sides.
Yeah, I think if we're trying to
see what the
that both sides
are for the other.
Or just a sidewalk side.
It would be both sides.
Okay.
You know, there's some areas along the southern side that needs very little landscaping.
Right.
There are some areas along the southern side that needs lots of landscaping. So it just depends what we're talking about.
But what you're going to do will enhance the area. Which is the least costly, coming up the middle or going on the sides?
It's $50,000 if we just do the sides.
Okay.
It's $200,000 if we do the sides and the median.
Sides.
Yeah, let's go with the sides.
So when somebody has a home there, we're going to plant trees in front of it?
If necessary. You know, we'd have to work with the homeowner and see. You know, we want to make this more of a green area coming on in. There's some yards that have little or no trees. There's others that have lots of trees.
Mm-hmm.
There's some that have driveways fronting on Richland Avenue, and there's a lot of them that have their backyards facing Richland Avenue. The ones that got the backyard, we want to heavily landscape those.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd rather have the trees than the cement.
Me too. Mm-hmm. Well, let's do
are you talking about the medians now,
no,
or are you talking about the sides?
I'm talking about the trees on the sides.
So the question is, do you want to go ahead and have the landscape medians or not? I'm hearing mostly
no.
Not.
No here.
No.
Yes. Not at this time, at least.
Okay.
Then we can see how much money is left over and look at other projects.
Okay, so based on that, we'll have over $600,000, according to my estimates, available. I will go ahead and I'm not going to get it to you the next meeting, but over the next 30, 60, 90 days. We're not in a rush on this. And we'll start. The reason I want to wait a little while is I believe, Larry, we're one easement away from getting the Pawnee Drive. It's the Walmart easement. Is the only easement we have left?
It's Walmart. We've sent everything else off.
As soon as we have that easement, we'll go out for bids, and I will then know for sure how much Pawnee Drive extension is going to be. It could be a million. It could be a million and a half. It could be 2 million. So I will have a much better estimate at that time
what money's available and how much we need. And we can look at other things. I'll look at the Lancaster. I'll look at some of these other ones.
Newberry.
And I'll give you a laundry list of what some of these projects will cost and entail. But this will at least get us started on finishing up the phase, first phase. So if I could have official vote for your consideration tonight, I'm asking you to approve the completion of the projects from the 2000 referendum, except for the median on Richland Avenue, and the tennis courts will come back with a recommendation. But all the other projects we will move forward with.
And would you talk to the one of the high school coaches?
Yes, we will.
At least
they
about
want hard court, I can tell you that. That's hard. What they play on.
Hard court.
I thought I heard there was a question of whether or not the medians were included.
The medians would not be included under the recommendation I'm giving you tonight.
No, the question I am raising is, were they included in the original 2000 project?
It was,
I heard you say that it wasn't
it
clear.
Just said streetscape.
It was not clear. It just said streetscape along Richland Avenue.
Okay, so why do we have to make even any mention of the medians?
We don't have to. I just mentioned it in my memo here, and I want to clarify my memo so that 5 years from now when we look at the minutes, I could know that I did not include the median.
Well, Roger, my point was that you stated what you wanted approval for. We were going to finish the projects in 2000 with the exception of the median.
Which is
but
in
the
my
medians
memo.
Weren't in there to start with, there is no exception of the median. We're going to landscape with trees.
If you ask some people, the medians were in there. If you ask other people, I asked our staff, some said, well, the medians were in, some said they weren't.
I thought they were in personally because of what we had started.
We have to look at the list and see what
we had started closer to the bypass area in terms of improving the median in that area on Richland Avenue. So that's my personal impression, but I'm probably wrong.
Okay. All right. The reason I make this point, and I don't want somebody to come back later and say, golly, you didn't fulfill your promise of doing all those projects, because here on the piece of paper you're saying, we take an exception to that. It's not included. We're funding it with the exception of the median.
See, I thought we
had, like we're saying the median's in there, we're not going to do it.
I thought we had started from the bypass moving up towards east, towards the
I don't care which way it is. I'm just trying to understand what was there to start with, what wasn't there to start with.
It was my understanding that the wording in there to start off with said Richland Avenue Streetscape, which could include a median.
Or it could not.
It could include.
So are we going to include it? Are we going to take the position it is included, and then we say we're taking exception? We're not going to do that.
We're just saying that out of Roger's memo to us here, out of this request to us, we're taking that out because we're going to consider the landscaping on both sides of the street, the streetscape.
Okay, I agree with that.
Yes.
I just wanted to make sure we weren't saying it was in there, and it was in that list of.
No, sir. It could have been in there if we had decided that we were going to do the streetscape and the median instead of on the sides of the roads.
All right.
Or both.
I give up. All right. Are we finished talking about? Are we ready to vote?
We're ready to vote.
We have a motion and a second.
We have no motion, but
we don't yet.
I move that we complete the items that were in the original 2001 cent sales tax that had not been completed up till now, and that we at least consider doing some additional work with the remaining funds at a later date.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Mr. Mayor, a second.
All right. Any more comments? All in favor? Show of hands. All right. Passes unanimously.
I'm a reluctant.
Huh? Yeah, I saw that hand. Oh, yeah.
Well, I think what we could do is look at what it would cost. Well, Roger says an extra, $100,000, Roger?
$150,000.
$150,000.
Leslie, did you vote yay?
I'm voting.
Or nay.
I'm voting yes with a question mark.
Okay.
Place that in the minutes, Sheriff.
Yes with a question mark. Okay, we are adjourned.
The players will love you if you build that parking lot before you build any tennis courts.
And one question. When you were talking about the meeting, did you guys do the landscaping of the meeting just now?